Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
How often do you ask for help? In my personal life, I do it all the time. I might ask another mom to pick up my kids. Before Waze, I asked for directions. One time when I showed up at a fancy event in my commuting shoes with my heels back at the office, I walked into a dress shop and asked to borrow one of those pairs they keep on hand. In my professional life, I'm not so needy. I do sometimes request later, shorter, and fewer meetings. I've been known to call the IT help desk, but if I'm struggling with a task, I usually just keep at it. Whether it's support on a tricky assignment or getting more resources for your team, it can be hard to ask people for help at work. But unless your office is a magical place filled with genies and fairy godmothers, you rarely get what you need or want without asking for it. Today, we're joined by Wayne Baker, a sociologist and professor at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan. He's spent much of his career focused on the issue of how to effectively solicit help. His conclusion? It involves not only understanding your goals and tailoring your message, but also embracing the reciprocity of both giving and receiving and spreading that ethos across your group. Baker is the author of the book, All You Have to Do Is Ask, How to Master the Most Important Skill for Success. And he joins me now. Wayne, welcome.
Thank you, Allison. Glad to be here.
So why do some of us shy away for asking for help at work?
Well, it's very common, and it occurs for a couple of reasons. One is that we are afraid that we'll appear to be incompetent or weak or ignorant or that we can't do our jobs. But, you know, here we need to update our belief. There's some new research that's been done by a team from Wharton and Harvard where they found as long as you make a thoughtful, intelligent request, people will think you are more competent, not less. Another reason is that we often underestimate other people's willingness and ability to help. And here, too, the research shows very clearly that most people are willing to help, even strangers, if they are asked. The problem is that most people don't ask for what they need.
There is this fine balance to walk, though, because we all want to be seen as self-starters, you know, able to work very hard independently, not bringing our boss problems, not overburdening our colleagues. So how do we navigate that, keeping our reputation, but still getting the help we need?
Well, self-reliance is a good thing. It's a strong value, but it's possible to over-rely on self-reliance. And many times we can just do the task more effectively, more efficiently, and quicker if we reach out and ask for help or input or resources of some sort. Now, what we have found in the workplace and often in various aspects of life as well is that people will be very generous, but they're afraid to ask for what they need. We call that the overly generous giver. And the cure for that is to ask more for what you need. But it also means that a way that you maintain your reputation, in fact, improve your reputation, is to be generous. So I always advocate that people should do two things. You should be generous. You should help people. Don't keep track of who helps you. It's not about a tit-for-tat exchange. And to freely ask for what you need when you need it. So that's the best place to be for an individual, for a team or for an organization.
You also, in your book, make a distinction between asking someone to do something for you and asking someone to teach you to do something so the next time you can be self-reliant and do it yourself.
Yes, there's two types of help seeking. There is autonomous and dependent. So autonomous help seeking means that you want to learn and you ask someone for input or help so that you can learn to do it the next time yourself. Dependent help seeking is that you just want the problem solved, you want the problem to go away, and you don't really learn anything in the process. A perfect example of that is whenever I ask my teenage son for help with my iPhone. Now, I'm from the analog generation. He is from the digital generation. He's a digital native, so he knows how to do everything. And so I'll get stuck on something. I'll say, hey, could you help me with this? And he just takes my phone, and his hand is a blur. I mean, he just does it really, really fast. And I say, no, wait, slow down. I want to know how to do it, so I don't have to ask you again. But he just wants to get it done, hands it back to me. I have the answer. My iPhone now works, but I don't know how to do it myself.
Every office does have people who do advocate for themselves. You know, they get more resources when they're working on projects, get more people put on their teams, get more time to finish their tasks. They have this sort of ask and you shall receive attitude, which is, you're saying, is great, but that does create resentment, right? Is that the right model?
Well, I mentioned the overly generous giver, which is the most common type that we see. We have an assessment that we use, and that's the result time and time again, that most people are overly generous givers at work. The opposite is what you just described. It's the selfish taker, the person who is always making requests and not really helping other people in return. I have a friend of mine who works at IBM Consulting, and he says, oh, yeah, those are sponges. We call them sponges. Those are the people who kind of suck in everything and don't give anything back. So over time, what we find is that the selfish taker's productivity and performance decline. The reason is that people stop helping them because they see that they're not participating. They're not giving any help back.
In your research, did you find any differences between people's willingness to ask for help depending on their career stage? You know, you could see a young person being too shy to ask for help, but you can also see a very senior person not wanting to, because then people might think they don't know what they're doing and shouldn't be in the position that they are.
Yeah, we call that the sage syndrome, is that leaders feel that they have to be the font of all wisdom, to know everything and never have any needs or never ask for help. But what we've really found over time is that that's really self-limiting. Leaders need to ask as well. In fact, I've proposed a new role for the leader, which is the chief help seeker, that they should ask for help. And by doing so, they're a role model for the kind of behavior that they want in other people. In fact, if a leader is not willing to ask, it's hard to get anyone else to do it as well.
So have you found that these sages are less likely to ask for help?
Oh, absolutely. And almost the higher up you go in an organization, the less, you know, the more people feel that they have to have all the answers. But that is just really, I mean, that's totally unrealistic, is that, you know, they have great needs. In fact, you know, the CEO or someone in the C-suite, you know, they encounter a lot of problems that they need to talk to other executives about, maybe outside of their company. Maybe they need what I call a brain trust, you know, a group of trusted people who are at a similar executive level, but across different companies that you can go to and consult.
And did you find any differences between genders or ethnic backgrounds?
With our assessment, we have not found any gender differences. That the propensity to be an overly generous giver is equally likely for men and for women. Now, we don't have enough data to answer your other question, is how might it differ by ethnicity or age?
Hmm. And what about across cultures?
It's very interesting. We have an activity called the reciprocity ring that we created about 20 years ago. You can kind of think of it as a group-level pay-it-forward activity where everyone makes a request, but you spend most of your time helping other people meet their request. Either you have the answer or the resource, or you can tap your network and get it for that person. And way back then, we thought that getting people to give, to help, was going to be the real problem, the real obstacle. But it turns out that the biggest barrier to generosity is people's reluctance to ask for what they need. So in the reciprocity ring, the request is the ticket of admission. So you have to do that. And because everyone's doing it, everyone's in the same boat, and it feels psychologically safe.
And so this works everywhere in the world.
Yes, that's why I mention it, is that it's now been done by about 150,000 people, 20 different countries, 12 different languages, and it always works. It seems to tap into some human universal. We've used it in Saudi Arabia. It's worked in Korea, the Philippines, Hong Kong, China, you name it. It's worked in South America. It's worked all over the place. You know, it's that it really taps into that human universal that people want to help. And if you give them permission to ask, all kinds of things are possible.
A lot of the hesitation in asking for help is not knowing exactly what you need or who to ask for it, you know, especially in large organizations. So how do you get past that?
You know, I mentioned before that you want to make a thoughtful, intelligent request. And part of that is knowing the goal that you're trying to achieve and then the request you need to make in order to get a resource to move you towards that goal. So I offer a couple of different ways of doing it. One of my favorite is the quick start method, and it's a number of sentence completers. And I'll read just two of them to you to get a sense of it. And I found when people do this, when executives do this, that it really gets them thinking about what they're trying to accomplish and what they need to accomplish it. So here's two. I am currently working on, and I could use help to, you know, they fill in those two blanks. Another one is, one of my biggest challenges in my life is to, and I need advice on. If you took just those two, and I have several of them, if you take those two, answer those, fill in the blanks, you'll go a long way to figure out what you're trying to do. It helps you to prioritize and what kind of resource that you need.
And then how do you go about finding the people who can get those things for you?
Well, there's a couple of proven methods. Well, one principle is that you really need to go outside of your inner circle of friends and acquaintances and family. Now, of course, they may have the resource or the answer you need, so you would want to ask them. But often we find the resource outside of that network, outside of that inner circle. One method I call the two-step method. So I might not know who to ask in terms of who has the resource, but I might know someone who would likely know someone. It's that two-step or two-degree method. So I have a colleague of mine, Jeff DeGraff, who is a innovation expert. He used the two-step method 180 times in 1 year to find the expert. And as he would say, is that he goes, you know, we often don't know who the expert is, but we know who to ask to get to the expert. It's that two-step method. Another is the use of your dormant ties. Now, a dormant tie is a connection or a relationship that you had with someone in the past, but you haven't kept up and your lives have gone in different directions. Now, many people feel reluctant, you know, reconnecting with someone from the past and making a request. But what the research shows is that people are really, they're thrilled. They're delighted to hear from you and very willing to help you. And because they're, what they know and their networks are really quite different now because they've gone in a different direction from you, because of that, they offer a world of resources that are available to help you solve a problem or get the advice that you need or whatever resource it might be.
Right. So how do I approach this initial outreach to my network? And then once I've identified a person who I really think could help me on this specific problem I'm dealing with, make the request to them?
I have five criteria called SMART criteria. So the S is for specific. And the more specific you can make your request, the more likely it will be fulfilled. And that's because when you ask a very specific request, it triggers people's memories about what they know and who they know. The M, this is how it differs from, you know, traditional M in SMART, which often means measurable, and measurability is nice, but what I mean is meaningful. You need to explain why the request is meaningful and important to you, to your organization, to your customers, or what have you. The A is for action. You have to ask for something to be done. Sometimes people will state a goal instead of a request, but a goal is a destination. A request is something that helps you move toward that particular goal. The R is for real or realistic. Now, I encourage people to never prejudge the capabilities of a group or a network. But, you know, you want to make a realistic request that has to be strategically sound. If your request is to colonize Mars next year, that's not going to happen.
If your request is to meet Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos to maybe start working on their Getting to Mars programs, you might be able to achieve that.
Yep. In fact, I ran the reciprocity ring for medical students at the Mayo Clinic. And one of the medical students had a very similar request, is that she wanted to be the flight physician on a space flight.
Oh, wow.
And it was amazing, Allison. She got so much help, so many great connections, connections to someone at NASA, to some engineers, some scientists. It was truly astounding. And for her, it was a stretch request, but still feasible because, you know, she was probably about 25 years old, getting her MD at the Mayo Clinic. You know, within 20 years or so, she would be about the right stage in her career to be the flight physician. And so for her, it was a stretch, but it was realistic.
Yeah. And let's get to that T in SMART.
Oh, the T is for time bound, is that there has to be a deadline. And I found that the more specific you can be, the more likely you'll get a response. Now, sometimes people say, oh, you know, next year sometime or maybe next quarter. That doesn't motivate people to respond. It's like, I need this by the end of December, or I need this by tomorrow. That urgency will really motivate people to respond. And then if someone can't help you, you know, to graciously accept that.
Right.
And you know, a no is an opinion. A no is information. Sometimes if you say, well, why, to the no, you might learn something that will help you to refine the request. In fact, you're telling that person that you see them as an important person, someone who can be helpful.
Yeah.
In fact, when you ask for help, people infer what we call an affiliative motive, which is that they feel that you're asking for help in part because you want a closer relationship with them.
Context of white supremacy. Urgency. It is regularly said here, replace white supremacy with justice. ASAP. Immediately. Sense of urgency, a deadline, not some nebulous thing like we'll get this done, you know, 50 generations from now, 100,000 years from now. Sense of urgency about solving this problem. Man, oh man, we were in Florida last week for Neutralizing Workplace Racism, so we did not have this broadcast. There were quite a few folks who emailed untiljustice@gmail.com, and they either had suggestions or input for workplace racism. Wow, was not a good week to not be on the air, but we are back safely, made it back to Seattle. Others safely made it back to their destinations or other locations. And ready to roll for workplace racism, the number to dial, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. So if you had things to share from last week, suggestions that you were looking for, input, I hope you were able to write it down, make a note, and are ready to share this week. We'll see if we can get through all of the emails from 2 weeks. The report that we began with, I thought was significant. Wayne Baker, this is a white male suspected racist. He wrote the book, All You Have to Do is Ask. And you heard in the segment his research talking about the importance of asking for help in the workplace. Now, he was asked directly, any cultural differences, any gender or other demographic differences. And he said, no, this works across culture. Ask, you know, as long as you're not selfish and someone who doesn't decline to help when others ask, but ask for help. And I found it fascinating for a few reasons. One, I think in the system, non-white people, we do get discouraged in many ways from asking for help. I think Mitt Romney, a part of his losing presidential campaign in 2012, was this notion of moochers, takers. And frequently, that ends up being some sort of white supremacist rhetoric that non-white people don't want to do anything, black people in particular, that they are just lazy and they just want you to give, that sort of rhetoric. And so you end up, I think, with that making some black people reluctant to request help. I know as it relates to compensatory investment requests, and that's not even like, you know, on a job asking somebody for money or a raise. I know as it relates to that, people have said that they feel some type of way about asking for help. I also know that sometimes if you ask for help, that white people, exactly as they said in the broadcast in the interview, that if you ask for help, well, people might think, oh, you don't know this information. You should already know this. How did you get, you know, this job to begin with? And I know that that can be the case for black people sometimes. And in an environment where people don't want to help you necessarily, which might come up in some of our emails, where you ask for help, you ask for constructive information and it's not provided. I know we've had people who talk about that before. So there can be a lot of variables that influence whether or not we are seeking out assistance. All of that being said, I still think it's hugely important to ask. Just thinking about it in a number of ways, I think, let's go to the, okay, you ask and you don't get a response. So they don't give the information. That's important, particularly if you have evidence. This was, you know, email, so this is time-stamped electronic documentation that you were seeking constructive assistance and were being denied. Either they weren't responding or responding but not answering the question, that type of thing, that can show, well, wait a minute, you all are not being helpful. You all are maybe even being subversive if you've got an employee who's trying to figure out the best way of going about carrying out his or her duties, and then you all are not giving this person information after they're asking, they're seeking it out, and you're not helping. Why? Why would you do that? Why would you withhold information from a fellow employee? And we just go from there. But this can happen in a lot of workplace settings. I still think it's important to ask. Like I said, it could be that they deny you. That might happen a lot. And just, you know, you document that. It might be that, hey, maybe they only assist you 25% of the time. Even that, you deal with that other 75%. That's racism, white supremacy to be expected. You codify that and compensate for, you know, not getting the information. Maybe you ask some other people. But that 25% of the time, that's, yeah, it's low. It should be 100%. But man, that's 25% of the time that you do get assistance that you would not have got at all if you didn't ask. You at least want the 25%. You work with the racism through the other 75%, but you at least, hey, if you go in and ask 7 days out of the week, you got this problem. I go in and I ask, hey, Paul, got this problem. That's what he said here. I'm working on this project here. Is it possible that you could help me out with da 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 da? And I got something down there. They give you whatever excuse. Okay, you come in and ask again on Tuesday. Maybe you ask a different person. Hey, Susan, doing project, blah, 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 blah. Nah, get out of here. You come in, you do it again on Wednesday. Come in on Thursday, you ask Greg. I'm in a good mood. Clemson won, made me think of good old founder Ben Tillman, Pitchfork Ben. It's a new year. All right, Coon. Let's see. What do you need help with? Let's do it. Bing. Now, you still got the racism to be expected. But, hey, you did get the assistance that you needed. Ask for help. I'm a huge proponent, and I'm speaking from personal experience because I didn't do this. Even we don't take it out of the workplace context. The compensatory investment requests. When I heard Mr. Fuller talk about that, I was like, what? You're just going to go ask some random white person? Like, what? Compensatory and give me, like, what? I'm what Mitt Romney said. I'm a moocher. I'm a taker. Nobody mooches better than whites. They will ask for things that they don't even need. They'll ask for money when they already have money. Ask to kill black people when they've already done so. Ask to get away with killing black people. And will frequently get it. So, hey, nobody mooches more than racist man, racist woman, racist child. And I've also explained it this way. If there was no system of racism, if we had a system of justice, what would be the problem or what would be incorrect about anybody in the known universe asking for something that is constructive, and particularly if they are making the request of someone who could provide that assistance without you know, undue stress. Like, they wouldn't have to miss meals for a day, or it wouldn't cost them a year of their life. Some, they wouldn't have to take a life or anything like that. It's something that they could provide that wouldn't cause them a whole lot of stress. Maybe a little time and energy or what have you. Might have to hang around this person for a little while or whatever, but wouldn't exactly cost you too much time and energy to fulfill this request. You could do it. What would be incorrect about asking under those circumstances? I've asked this question before, and I've never heard anyone say or give a response at all. They've never come up with the first thing that would be wrong about it. That's what I mean about the system of white supremacy. It just perverts everything. We end up having an environment where victims of racism, and I think black people in particular, are discouraged from asking for help. We should still ask, and we should not be surprised if we don't get it. System of racism. Thought that segment was important. If folks have thoughts, and I might even see about getting that author as a guest on the program, because I just was fascinated by many aspects of it. Anyway, and if you have the moochers, because he talked about that too, the people that are just always asking for help, always trying to freeload and get other people to do everything for them, and then they do not reciprocate. They are not there to help other people out when you are the one that needs assistance. If we have folks who have thoughts on that, direct experience on that, feel free to participate. 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Email again, untiljustice@gmail.com. All right, so we got just a trough of emails. I'm trying to catch up from last week. First portion of the email, we had a victim of racism, a black female. She was requesting assistance. She basically, co-workers have been trying her patience, asking basic questions. So this is right in line with what we just talked about. So, and this person took screenshots. That can be important. But again, if you got the email, you got the electronic documentation, I would just make sure if you're using some sort of email that is specific to your workplace, it might be a situation where you need to forward those emails to your personal account or save them on thumb drives or what have you, just so that you have that data. But you got the electronic documentation. If you be, and you can print out the hard copy, you know, do it the old style 2019. You could print out a hard copy, so you could have a hard copy folder as well. But you got the emails, you got your timestamp, bang. But basically just asking questions. It seemed that there were changes to policy and procedure in the workplace. And so this victim of racism, she was just seeking, well, now that they've had these adjustments to policy, what should we say to clients? What would be the company line, as they say, so that everybody is giving out the same uniform response to this change in policy, and, you know, we'll know what the best thing to say is. And it seemed that they were being difficult. That's one I would not, I would try not to let that try my patience too much, I think. This is just me talking. If other folks have a strategy, they can feel free. If it's a policy change, I'm not in charge. I already know that. System of white supremacy. It was not my decision. They probably didn't tell me, consult me about this at all. They just told me, you know, hey, policy has been changed. This is what it is. Okay. The clients, all I would do is relay the same thing. I might even tell them exactly, use the same language and everything that they told me, that, you know, we had this policy change and this is how it's going to impact you. And if they get upset, well, I can understand that you're upset, but we're just trying as best we can with the new policy implementation. And if they have procedure where, you know, you can talk to someone else who is in authority responsible for these changes, I would relay. But that's one I would try as best I can to remain patient, because, yeah, I'm not in charge of these changes. And I would just try to accept them as best I can, keeping that in mind that, you know, white people can come in and change anything around with regards to policy and procedure at any time. And, you know, I just try as best I can to compensate as we go. And if my job is to inform other people who might be upset about those changes, because they'll do that a lot of times in work situations, they'll end up deliberately, in my view, manufacturing situations where a non-white person, they have to be the one who responds and catches a lot of frustration from a client about something not being correct, something not being done correctly, or there's a new implementation of procedure that is not going to be to their liking, and you will be the one that has to get fussed at and explain all this and deal with all that stress. I've seen that happen before. I have experienced that before in a workplace. Thank you. And I've seen that happen before. The best I can give is to try to recognize that about those policy and procedure changes, compensate as best you can. And I would announce that clearly, like, oh, yeah, they've just made new implementation of policy. And, yeah, we just try as best we can to compensate. I'm really sorry for your frustrations. And, you know, you can speak to the folks who make the rules. You know, you can talk to them about this if you need more details. If other folks, if they have a better method for dealing with it when they have policy and procedure changes, and then you as a black person end up being the one who has to go through these changes, feel free. Now, this was two parts. The same individual, she also was attempting to get a promotion. Bravo. We should all be looking for career advancement. In so doing, she did what Wayne Baker just talked about. She asked for help. She listed the exact position that she is interested in achieving and said, hey, do you have any resources? And not surprisingly, the white person believed it was a white woman, suspected racist. It was not just a fountain of information and, oh, yes, let's have lunch together and I'll tell you all about it. You can just pick my brain and ask any questions. Oh, it was, hey, I don't know if I have any experience with that. I haven't been involved with that. It's fast paced and changing. So, you know, I haven't been connected with that in a good, what time is it? Oh, yeah, you know, been 30 minutes since I talked to anybody over there. So I'm about as clueless and ignorant as can be on that. I'm almost illiterate myself. No problem. We take that as a no, and she explained why. That might be one where example that I said, I might have to ask another person, and it might come to me asking as many people as possible to get additional information about this position. Now, if she's the only person there, then that does put you in some difficulty. But generally, if there are other people working there, white people have a lot of information. I would probably just ask, see if there are other people that I can get those details, get that information. Compensate, that's what we do. And again, not being surprised about no's wouldn't be the case, you know, or I'll put it this way. In a system of white supremacy, there are many reasons not to be optimistic that people will be overjoyed, as Stevie Wonder said, to help out a black person on a job. You still ask. That would be mine. I would just ask other folks and just keep in mind, yeah, I am seeking a promotion and it'd probably be a lot of white people. I might even be competing against some of these folks, or they might have family members and friends in mind that they want to get this position. So, yeah, I'm not going to be surprised if they're not leaping to help me. If other folks have thoughts, comments, feel free on suggestions for this specifically. Let's see. Next, just going down the line. Good evening, all. I would like to share a workplace racist incident, or incidents rather, plural, sorry. Number one, I was working in what whites call a good area, in quotes, and we were replacing the concrete platform, and there was a bike rack that had to be replaced along with the bolts that anchor it to the concrete. This anchors, the anchor rods were approximately 3 inches in length, and the suspected racist that I worked with said, said if we had to do these anchors in Newark, we would have to install 6-inch anchors. Now, I am ignorant, and since this is a little geography, I can give a brief pause since we just got back. I'm still trying to grasp. It has not even been 48 hours since I have been back from Florida. Every time I leave Washington State now, I recognize anew how far Seattle is from everything. They talk about the boondocks. This is the boondocks. Like, it is super far, and particularly this time going all the way to Florida. Like, whoa, since this is not the compensatory call-in, it feels like I live in the caves. We do fly past Mount Rainier to get out, but it feels like I live up in the mountains in a cave and just come down to visit the townspeople from time to time and then go back up to the cave. It's so far away from everything. Be that as it may. Number one, this seems like, I was going to say a racist joke, but just a statement of racism. So Newark, New Jersey, where they have the worst water ever, worse than Flint, apparently, and a substantially high population of black people. I think the mayor, Roz Baraka, black male, but really bad water and lots of other problems. I think they have a consent decree with the enforcement officials there as well. They don't do right by black people. Surprise. So they would need 6-inch bars to protect the bikes in Newark, New Jersey, presumably because this is not a good area. I don't think people, I've never heard anyone say that Newark, New Jersey is a good area. I think Thomason, New York has talked about having resided in New Jersey for some time. I've never heard him say that, oh man, Newark, New Jersey and the Honorable Cory Booker, that is the good place. That's the good area that you want to hang out and everybody is selling kidneys and working Uber so that they can go and get a house in Newark, New Jersey. Maybe I'm misinformed. But yeah, that's a little racist. The niggers will steal anything in Newark. Can't even have my tricycle outside for 3 seconds. Number two, I've always practiced being on time for work. Read that again. I have always practiced being on time for work, even before time, so I can unwind from the commute and prepare myself for the day. This one morning, I was told to move my car by a suspected racist. I asked him why. Asking questions. White man tells you something on a job, you're supposed to jump. He says, jump, you say how high, not why. What? Question asking Negro. So he says, move the car, and I asked him why, because he has 3 car lengths of parking in front of him. His response was, we need to move so there's enough space for everyone. So to stop along back and forth, I moved up, but the act of racism that was practiced was what he didn't instruct another suspected racist to move his car. Oh, he didn't tell. Okay, gotcha. Just me. I suspect this was a deliberate act of racism to disrupt my morning. I suspect you are correct, sir. Again, good observation. Just noticed that. And that could even be another question. I'm not necessarily advising to ask, but, you know, I noticed that this other person pulled in, Roger, Tom, whomever, pulled in and you didn't make the same request that they move their vehicle up. Why is there a difference? Don't we want to have the same policy, codification, making sure everybody has the same space in the parking lot? Question to ask or not, but good observation either way. Number three, I noticed when you asked a suspected racist about if they are white, they give a long list of racial classifications or even some that they are not, Jewish, etc. Has anyone else encountered this? Last thing I know, on the compensatory call-in, you say no metaphors, similes, or the like, because often racists compare two things and say they are the same. So my question is, when a white person says bro, brother, sister, sis to a black person, would that be considered a metaphor? I have to think about it for a second. I generally just log that as tacky, but if you were asking me specifically, yes, because yeah, you don't have the same biological parents. It would have to be a metaphor and a tacky one at that to imply that we have some sort of familial connection in the system of white supremacy. Yeah, it'd be a tacky metaphor. And exaggerating some sort of relationship between us. Yeah, I would agree. Or he didn't say he thought it was a metaphor. He asked, so I would say yes. I'd say it's a metaphor. Yes. Next, see if I can get in one more, and then we'll get to the live callers. Hopefully I can get through all of the emails today. Oh, man, just going in line of people that emailed. So I think I said last week that Thomas in New York had emailed for workplace racism. And I was so excited, Delectable Negro, and I didn't even get to share. I think this one, there are no identifying images, so I can share this. I'll put this on Twitter and what have. And this is a great reminder. I needed that. If folks, since we missed last week, if folks have any final comments, incidents with the holiday parties, the potlucks, where they try and jam a candy cane in your mouth, or I baked a pie or roast giblets, whatever it is, and they got to bring it all in and cram it down your mouth. You got to take five helpings home to share with your family. If anybody has any additional office party incidents that they want to share as we wrap all of that up, thank God. Please share. Codification about that is important. I know, like I said, our technically holiday party is still pending. It's not until the end of this month. So if anybody else has that wackiness, I guess we'll continue through the month of January. I do know they have Super Bowl parties at some workplaces. So that's kind of the same thing. The Super Bowl is basically a holiday. So we might need to invoke the same rules moving forward. But if anybody has additional holiday racism, white supremacy, this would be a good time to share as we are at the beginning of the so-called new year. Thomas in New York. Now, he wrote in, gift themed candy. He apparently got a chocolate bar left at his workstation with pictures of Negroes on it. I was stunned. A long chocolate bar. And it's got little snow cans, and it's even got what looks like some black Jewish people. It's got a black person and the menorah lighting the candles and what have you. It's got a black person on a train. It's got a black person under a Christmas tree, so I guess they're not all Jewish. It's got a black person with a rose, a whole family of black people decorating a Christmas tree. Negro-themed chocolate. Delectable Negro Vincent Woodard in my top 10. What I just say, all of that, the potlucks, I don't care if it's giblets, vegan custard, Starbucks coffee, which I've seen that one too. None of the above. Negro themed chocolate. Oh, wow. Look at that. It's got a little dog on it and everything. Wow. Not eating any of that. I wouldn't re-gift it. It would just go in the trash and that's it. Do not trust anyone to put anything. I said that at the retreat. Minimizing, allowing people the opportunity, racists, the opportunity to put things on our fork, spoon, in our mouth. Thank you, I'm good. And that would just be, that might even just be a policy in general, even with other black people. Like, unless these black people, victims, period, unless we have some rapport, I know these folks, I trust these folks, I'm good. I just don't do that. I'm just getting in a habit about that. It's just every time it's food is presented, I'm not going to salivate. I'm not an animal. I have some discipline. I don't just think because food is presented, it's time to eat. I'm good. I brought food in. I'm not starving. And that's just a form of control in general. Like, I think that's just a great workplace code to have. I am going to be very disciplined about food in the workplace. Just because the company decides to buy pizza today, that does not mean it's time to dig in and eat. Just because Paul brought in his favorite, you know, lasagna that he makes or chili that he makes every winter, no thank you. I don't care if he asks me eight times. That'll just have to be eight. Oh, no thanks, Paul. I'm sure it's delicious. No thank you. I'm good. Oh, you brought me Negro chocolate. Oh, that's wonderful. As soon as she leaves, put that in the trash. Or, and you could be discreet about it because some of the white people, you know, I mean, if you take it out to the vehicle, you stop to get gas, whoop, whoop, they got a trash can at the gas station. No big deal. But Negro, I would definitely, exactly what Thomas in New York did, I would definitely take a photograph. Negro-themed chocolate? Oh, yeah. Whoop, whoop. Delectable Negro and the man knot. We have talked about that a lot. Dr. Welsing would have had a field day with that. Negro themed chocolate for Christmas. That is exactly what I had asked Santa Claus for the entire time. A box of dark chocolate with Negroes on it. I will stop there. We will have the rest. Let's see. Can I get the rest of these in? I'll do my best. We'll see if we can get the rest of the workplace racism emails in. If folks have suggestions for how to deal with requesting information from coworkers and them not responding, and or you're looking for a promotion and you're trying to get information to put you in the best position to get this promotion, and the same thing, they're stonewalling you, not giving out any information, being tight-lipped, as they say. If you have suggestions for how you would respond in that ordeal, please share 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 to chime in. Certainly, if you have your own situation that you would like to share, if you would like to get suggestions how to solve problems without creating new problems, we will do our best to use logic. Anyone, if you have figured out some strategies that work, no spectating in 2020. We have wasted time. We want to be efficient and effective. If anybody listening, non-white person, you have figured out a few things that work in the work environment to solve problems, stop white people. This can be helpful in getting that promotion. This can be helpful if you need to get time off. This is helpful in getting policy and procedure if they are trying not to share details. Get on that line, *61, no spectating in 2020. Folks who dialed in, if you have thoughts, suggestions, or your own situation to discuss, line should be open. Proceed. Not hearing some of the folks who have hands up while folks are spectating. While folks are spectating, make sure I check through, continue to work through the emails. Continuing. Earlier this month, a three-part miniseries aired on British television called Sticks and Stones. The episode centers around a black male experiencing overt bullying in the workplace. I haven't watched it myself, but thought it might be of interest to you and the listeners. Perhaps you may want to review it for one of your programs. And they even have a review, which I guess I can post. I think someone else posted me about this program. I have not seen it yet, but someone else posted and they said that the black male that the program is focused on, he's in a tragic arrangement, Cal Bell. So I'm not surprised about that. Making a program that centers around a black male being bullied in the workplace. And it seems like this might be, this is a British television program. Wow. And a miniseries at that. I'm not sure if it's serious because I haven't seen it. I'm not sure if it's serious. I'm not sure if it's a drama, if it's a little of both. Like, I'm not sure. But if the whole thing is a workplace drama, I will attempt to check it out and then see what the commentary around it is. If they just practice racism against him and this just is fun entertainment, racial theater, UK style. Boris Johnson is president, so I mean it could be similar type thing. I'm not sure. I would have to check it out and see if they have any sound clips and the like, but I do know tragic arrangement is involved in all of this, so it cannot be anything that ends constructively. We'll check it out and comment on that as we proceed. Reading more important than watching television. Continuing through the emails, just since I'm here, I can run through as many as possible. Let's see. An investor. He writes, black male, this is an encounter I had with a race soldier on the job. I was walking by a female race soldier in the office who was wearing a tacky Christmas sweater and what I think were ornaments on her head. I was not looking that closely. December 24, 2019, female race soldier, you think I look like a hood rat? Woo, man, I think that's a metaphor too, hood rat. Sorry, I get my composure back. All right, female race soldier, you think I look like a hood rat, stated loudly enough for others to hear. Me, I was not thinking anything about the way she looked and just walked by without responding or changing my facial expression. December 26, 2019, female race soldier, you called me a hood rat. Me, you said that about yourself. I would never refer to someone as a hood rat. Female race soldier looks exasperated and walks off. I have learned a lot, or I have learned not reacting from the workplace racism program. That is something we talk about every broadcast. I put it in the description, managing emotions in the workplace, and particularly when it comes to accusations and accusations from white women, like, oh man, that is super serious. In all of that, it is not, it cannot be, you called me a hood rat. What? I didn't say, what did you say? Heifer, I didn't, not at all. And some of the cases, it looks like he didn't say anything at all. In fact, that's what he said. I was not thinking about the way she looked, and he said, walked by without responding or changing my facial expression. That's what we've talked about. I know Emmy has said that repeatedly. Not just what you say or don't say, but your body language, your nonverbals, facial expressions, all of that. You called me a hood rat. I don't even change the gait of my stride. Left, right. Left, right. On the path I was going, wherever I happened to be, you know, jetting off to in the office. If I was going to my workstation, if I was going to the lunchroom, get me an ice water, hope they haven't put it on the floor, whatever. But I'm not responding at all. Now, when she comes back the second time, now at that point, it's like, okay, this is looking like it's going to be an everyday thing. Now, it might be the best course to not say anything at all again, or you nip that in the bud. This is also a great one where, hey, hood rat, I have never heard him use that language. Anybody else here heard him call someone a hood rat or even use phrasing of that nature? Nope. Always professional. Hood, I don't even know what a hood rat. That's another one, too. That might be a great question, too. What's a hood rat? Since we had a white woman volunteer this term, what's a hood rat? And let her explain. All of that. We talked about that before. White people using what is called Negro slang, what words and phrases that are generally thought of or associated with black people, and they bring it up exclusively with black people. They don't use this. They don't wait until the white people come around and start talking about hood rats in the workplace. They wait for a black person and then decide that they're going to break out all of their cool colored slang. That right there, in my view, these are deliberate acts of racism. And this particularly, this just seems really sinister because it's like you're coming out with an accusation. I've said that for years. Take all accusations in the workplace serious because you just never know when you end up being called in and it's not Happy New Year. It's, you know, we cannot have you running around here calling employees hood rats. Now you go in there and clean out your desk because we're not. And it's like, what? Call out. And something you don't even get an opportunity to explain. Like, those accusations can be really, really serious. So I've always said, take that seriously. Great job not responding. And I would take this. This is a dangerous white woman. All of this, to do this consistently. And the person included, this was done with an audience. She did this loud enough for other people to hear. Oh, you called me a hood rat. Maybe they were a part of it. Maybe she let them know in advance. Oh, look, I'm going to set this nigga up. Watch how I do this. We'll see how he responds. Maybe she didn't, you know. Maybe some of them think, wow, he's around here calling white people names and hood rats and stuff. Wow, that's so disgraceful. Something should be done about that. That is the inertia of racism, white supremacy. They just talked about that mass burial site in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It does not take much, especially from a white woman. So I would take that seriously. I would take her seriously, and I would be very careful around her. I would make sure that we are not isolated anywhere. And that might even be something to report because I'm of the opinion that any accusation in a work environment, it should be investigated. Like, let's see if that's founded, because I don't want to be in violation of anything here in the workplace. I don't want that to be brought up when it's performance review time. I don't want this to be referenced when it's promotion time, raise time, anything that anybody can step forward and say, well, oh, he was anything less than sterling as an employee here, that he was rude to another colleague or anything like that. Generally, that's my opinion, that if I'm being accused of wrongdoing, let's investigate so I'll learn. I'll make sure I'm not in violation of policy and procedure. And if it's false, well, then, hey, we might need a retraction immediately because I take my reputation seriously. And no one should be making false accusations in the workplace, should they? End with a question. But this is a dangerous white woman, super dangerous. And I would have to take the code would have to be amended to come in. I would take those accusations seriously. That's nothing to joke about. If anybody has suggestions, recommendations for how they would neutralize this white woman specifically, who's come in, this is two different occasions, and accused this black male of calling her a hood rat, feel free to share. Let's see. I'll check in again. Some of the other folks who dialed in with a hand up have comments to share. Assume folks are still listening, getting their thoughts together, seeing hands, or maybe getting to an area where they can speak, perhaps. If anything, if the folks listening in, hand up or no, not sharing, if this means that 2019 was that prosperous that nobody's had any problems or difficulties for 2019, say for the folks who emailed, well then, hey, make sure you invest racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. *61 if you would like to participate. And if there is any interference going on with the phone lines, that should be shared as well. It is a little odd. Some of the people who do have hands up, it seems some of them hung up, called back in. It seems quite a few people who did have a hand up, hung up, called back in. That's another thing to expect as well. You ask for help, you might not get it often. It is a system of racism, white supremacy. If you are doing anything to attempt to work against the system of white supremacy, racism, expect massive resistance. They got whole campaigns that are called that, so it should not be a surprise if the phone is a little wacky too. We'll see if that's, you know, the case or not. I was going to read another. I'll see. Let's see. Let's make sure the phone is behaving correctly. So I'm going to double check the audio on my end, and then we'll double check the phone line. So let's see. So sticks and stones, we'll do it this way. Let's see. So sticks and stones, I missed that one. Is my audio not doing right? That's odd. Alrighty. And then I'll check the phone line again. Make sure my audio is working correctly. Let's see. Alright, let's see. Are you with us, B, in Toronto? Oh, okay, okay. Let's see, be in Toronto. Oh, it's not picking up my audio. How odd. All right, let's see. Seeing my audio. Be in Toronto, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yay, I can finally hear you.
Awesome, awesome. I don't know what was up with that because I was dialed. I could hear the sound playing. Could hear everything. Was not, I guess my audio was not going out, and then I wasn't hearing you all for a while. So you all didn't hear the emails? Yes?
Yes, I heard the email.
Okay.
And then after it went silent, then I heard unmuted, and then it went silent, and then I called in back about a couple of times, and then it went to unmuted, silence, then I heard a cowbell. Then it went silent, and then unmuted again, and then shortly after, that's when you got back on.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Well, I'm glad to be being heard now. Seems I'm still being heard, and you all are there. Expect massive interference. That was quite odd, because I was seeing hands up, and then they would disappear, and I was hearing things. I had my headphones on. I was hearing when the audio segment played and didn't press any buttons. I was not playing on the switchboard during the first portion of the broadcast. It should be that the audio was fine. Let's make sure. Yeah, the audio should be fine. And I think I assume unless the live stream was disrupted as well, that should have been okay. I guess if people were listening via the live stream, but we are here now. We can hear B in Toronto. You said you were able to hear when I was speaking about your issue from the emails before. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. I was able to hear. And I wanted to say thank you. Yes, I was able to hear up to Thomas in New York's email that you had read. That was the last one I heard. Then you went to the call, and then that's when it got a little fuzzy from there. But it's to be expected. It's we're in the system that we're in.
Absolutely. Did you, I guess, have either an update with your situation or in terms of trying to, with the promotion and or with them not wanting to give out information on how to deal with change in policy and procedure?
Yes, I did have an update. Thank you so much. And yes, you're absolutely correct. You know, just to follow according to what their protocol is going to be. I just noticed that with this particular organization, they will change things midstream. And as you've mentioned, the non-white person often receives the brunt of the effects of having to disseminate the not so encouraging news to the client or their family or whomever is included in that. So, and that's where that's the situation I've been in. So that's why I had requested what to say as a part of a protocol, so they wouldn't be able to turn around and say, "Oh well, B in Toronto just went and took it upon herself to say this explanation without getting the approval from the managers." So I wanted to cover myself in that respect as well. In terms of the promotion, unfortunately, I didn't get it. And again, to be expected. What I was told is that I did very well. It was more of an interview. I was told that I did very well in it. So similar to the other interview that I did, and I didn't get it. However, I wasn't as brief as I should have been. I was too detailed. I appear to have not have known all the particulars of the position, despite the fact that I went to the most senior worker in that particular department that I was applying to. And that I need to familiarize myself with more resources, even though I'm the main person that is often sending out a lot of resources to the colleagues, of which it's done through email, so it's date and timestamp. But it's just really interesting that as the contract is winding down, magically the skills, the same set of skills that I had in the beginning that they were claiming to ooh and ah about and compliment bomb about are the same skills they're now, you know, questioning and claiming that it's regressing. And it's very, very interesting. And, finding out who received the position, it was yet again another white woman. I almost feel like DJ Khaled saying another one, because this has been number four, another one. So there's three other positions that I've applied for. I'll see what happens. I mean, you know, if I have not received one out of seven, that, you know, but again, it's to be expected. I came across some information here on how to deal with the terrorism. Maybe a helpful tip would be to really take an assessment of what's happening to you while you're on the job at the plantation. And I know that in the compensatory call-in, I had mentioned about taking a snapshot of your workday and dividing it up into reasonable act, such as I sat down in my cubicle, I made a phone call. And then the second part would be white's reaction. So what did you hear from that? What did they say? What did they do? And just list it. You don't need to make any judgments about it. Just list all the things that they've done. And by doing that, just taking, and this is just one day of a snapshot. I came to realize, it gave me a visual of, oh my goodness, these people are just so negative. So like anything that comes out of their mouth is negative. And it really helps to give you that visualization that it's not you, it's them. And then the way to deal with it is they have a method called Grave Rock, but I know that under the interrogation, like military strategies of interrogation, they call it Gray Man, where you just, you don't have any, you keep your composure, but you do not react. You just respond. The other thing you can do is just silent ways of defiance. Like in your mind, you know, pretend that you're giving the F finger to them in your mind. Taking a little bit longer than you usually would to get a task completed. So doing subtle ways of defiance, but not so much that it reflects a compromise in your work. But ways that you can remind yourself that no, not all of you have to be subjected to this. There's some parts of you that can go against it. Again, paying attention to policies and procedures, documenting, and when you've built up enough of a reserve to do so, speaking about it to demand that a change be done. But of course, we know that it comes with a major consequence, which could be a job loss. So to do what's right for you. And thank you. I'll leave the line.
Cannot have enough white women. Four more. Number four. And this is the era of Me Too in North America. So we should not be surprised white women come into power doing their role on the plantation. One thing that I do remember, I think Mr. Fuller had an audio segment where he was talking about, you know, still learning and making an effort to learn while we are in these workplace settings, where you talked about you, I think, had three other or a number of other positions that you were still applying for within the company before while you're still under contract, that it's, they have shown they're racist the whole time. That's what you talked about in terms of the racism and being hostile to you in the workplace, boxing you in. You talked about the techniques specifically, denying promotions, the gossiping, like everything, commenting about your work, saying it's regressing, not answering questions via email, a lot of evidence. might not be the environment. We talked about that too. You were addressing that as yourself. Might not be an environment, or I mean, clearly they've shown this is not an environment that's going to nourish your career development. That being the case, you have the resume updated, LinkedIn page and all the rest updated, looking for better options, a better environment where you can ask. I mean, certainly they're still going to be racist if they got individuals classified as white who are employed there. But at minimum, I can ask workplace related questions and get an acceptable answer, particularly if I'm just asking about policy and procedure. Like, that's, you know, lobbing me easy ones. I should be able to answer these and no problem and be ecstatic to answer. Like, yes, we have someone who wants to do competent work. Great. In the meantime, I would at minimum use these additional opportunities for the jobs you're applying for. I would at minimum use them to train. I'm going to get better at how to do my interview techniques. I'll be better beforehand. Might be applying to other companies. Hopefully we'll be applying to other companies so that I can get a better position, get away from all these white chicks here. And then if you get one, great. Works out either way. If I don't get it, not that I'm stunned. They just continuing their same tacky and terroristic ways. And then if I do get it, well, then great. And either way, I'm going to practice my skills, still learning about as much as possible in the work environment. And I totally grasp in trying to cover yourself. I would recommend that victims of racism do that. They have a policy and procedure change, and it's going to be your responsibility for communicating this to other employees or communicating this to clients. How should we best communicate this information? Unless that's a part of your job description. You are the person that's supposed to come up with what they call the spin. You are the one that's supposed to come up with the flowery words to respond. Unless that's the case, ask, what is our company line on what we should tell folks when they are irate about the changes to policy and procedure? What should we say exactly? And wait for a response. And then if you don't get one, boop, put that in your workplace folder. So the number again, looks like audio is still working correctly. Fantastic. The number again is 605-313-5164, the code 564-943, pound, press star 61 if you would like to participate. I do have to say, because we did the retreat in Florida, Gus T has to update his resume again, and I just had to update my resume before we left because I had been teaching different types of classes that I hadn't taught before, so I had to adjust my resume to reflect that. Now we've done the retreat again, I have to add a whole nother retreat to my resume. As I stated roughly a year ago, that many of the yoga instructors that I meet have not hosted a yoga retreat at all. Gus T has now hosted two outside of his own state, so-called. Definitely want to make sure that is noted. Still NIGRA, system of white supremacy, but I mean, hey. Update that resume. Do things to polish your resume consistently. Let's see. We'll make sure phone lines still working. So if we have folks, if you dialed in, if you have your own situation, or if you have suggestions, because we did have people who had problems that they were seeking suggestions. I think Bea in Toronto, just talking about her situation, you got white people who don't want to give you information, details, when you're asking for a promotion, and or white people who don't want to respond when you ask for how should I inform folks about the changes to protocol. They're probably going to be upset, and they don't want to respond to that either. If you have suggestions for that situation, or if you have your own comments, suggestions, codification to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I sent you an email about the phone not working. You can disregard that because the phone is working. I did hear V. She was like, hello, hello, poor thing. Hello, hello. But she couldn't hear me because I was trying to answer her. But everything seems to be working now. So I'm glad about that. I don't have anything negative so far. I don't know how I feel about that because everyone has these horrible stories. But I was teaching class, and I'd like to thank, well, I'm sure they can't hear me, but the students, because most of the students were black, and they participated and were very helpful when it came time for my surprise review or whatever. They came through, and they acted that way all the time, but, you know, they came through for me. So I was asked to teach another class, a different class, and they were like, well, I talked to so-and-so, and, you know, we know you teach this, and so I got a good review, so hopefully I can teach this other class, and that'll go well. I do thank V for the advice. I never heard or thought about that right now, what you're doing today, and, you know, is it your responsibility, not your responsibility? So I will take that under advisement. And anytime you're looking for a new position or even a promotion, usually there's, well, I'm sure she knows a similar position. So usually, not all the time, but usually, I would say there was a similar position somewhere else. And, you know, kind of I guess you have to go around about how to find what it entailed, what you had to do. And for me personally, what has helped me from time to time is sometimes I'm just there. If people just talk like I'm not there, like I worked at a school and one professor was talking to another one and they were saying, oh, yes, they want the Asian kids. Those are the kids they want because they do this, that, and the other. I took that information and I was able to tell black students, you know, this is what they want. They, according to this man, talking to the other white people who make hiring decisions, you are not priority, so you're going to need to do this, that, and the other to stand out, to make sure you are the one that is selected and, you know, as compared to the other people. So be aware of that. So a lot of times that has helped me. I've just been, you know, people are talking, you know, I guess I was non-threatening, I guess, I don't know. And they would talk around me, and I wouldn't say anything. I wouldn't go, oh, why? Like I said, don't get upset. Just take the information and pass it on to other people. So that is what's helped me. And like I said, it's only been 3 days, but I guess the only little issue is I'm starting a new job, and they're supposed to send the computer, but it hasn't gotten here yet. But I can't do anything about that, and I let the supervisor know, and, you know, they are aware of that because they have to send them the information. So far, so okay. You know, just make sure I read the manual and read back Mr. Fool's work and make sure I stay on code. That's it. Thank you.
Awesome. Stay on code. Hope you said you're getting you're waiting for the computer to arrive? Oh, I thought that was it. Thought that was what she said. She's waiting for a computer to arrive. If that was it, yeah, same codification. Great. Enjoy it. Their computer, I've said before, use it as though it's theirs in terms of websites that we view or don't view. Make sure we stick with that same codification with the new piece of technology. But, yeah, stick to your code. And I like that in terms of being codified and figuring out different ways of getting information from racists who are not always forthcoming and wanting to share with non-white people. That is excellent time to be codified as well. That extraction process, be codified. Let's see. Oh, and thank you for the update. Much obliged. I think there were you and a couple other folks were sending messages or emailing to let me know that there was a problem with the audio feed. Thank you kindly. Need all the assistance I can get. Ask for help. That's what they said. Other folks who dialed in are with us. If we missed you totally, if you have commentary, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. Caller in Seattle.
Hi. I had a chuckle when you were telling me that you feel like you are all the way in the boondocks here in Seattle. Oh, it does definitely feel that way when you're coming from the East Coast.
anywhere, really. But anyway, yes, ma'am, you were saying.
For the caller from Toronto, I think that B is doing exactly what is needed to be done. Granted, her situation is that she is being faced with a lot of barriers that are just that keep coming up for her to gain any kind of permanent position at her current job or place of work. And so I think that after the next time that she does apply for a promotion and doesn't get it, I think the best thing would be for B to just move on to a different company, a different organization, and try her luck there. Four times or three times looking for a promotion and not getting it is definitely an indication that they are covertly or overly even practicing racism at the workplace. And I think that it would be best for her to just move on. So that would be just my little suggestion there. For me, my situation at work, I've haven't had the opportunity to apply for a promotion or ask for a promotion just because I've been in the position for 2 years, but I see other white ladies, white folks getting just handed a promotion, even though, you know, in my assessment, the from how I've seen their quality of work and what comes back from them, their promotion is not warranted. But that is not for me to assess. It's for the white supremacists to do so. And so for me, I have not figured out what it is that they do, what it is and how they strategize to get that promotion other than perhaps having had a long tenure at work or just having the right skin color. For me, at work, I work with a very difficult boss who's non-white, but in the tech field, you'll probably know what a non-white boss would be. And so it's been very difficult to work with him, granted that I was put into the position without that not being my choice. And so with that kind of difficult job, I have done my very best, and I've taken the last 2 weeks off, haven't looked into any of my emails from work, because every time I look at my laptop to check into my emails, I just get really, I get some kind of a panic attack. I'm just not into it at all. So I go back to work on Monday, and I probably am going to look at emails before Monday just to get a head start, knowing that there's going to be a lot after 2 weeks. But I have the feeling with the anxiety that I'm experiencing after not being at work for 2 weeks. It's been great not being, just taking the break. And just the thought of being back at work with folks that obviously don't like me being there, don't like my presence there, it just fills me with a lot of anxiety, and I'm not sure what to do about that.
Thank you kindly for sharing. I will humbly submit that it's not just the East Coast, that pretty much going anywhere from Seattle feels like you are, or I am, leaving a cave in the mountains to go out. I think I have driven from here to San Francisco. I've flown from here to San Francisco. Even that felt kind of far. I think unless you're going to Portland, pretty much everything is like a major trek to get there from here. But be that as it may, that is major. I mean, anxiety is major. To feel that, and particularly to feel anxiety about just being present in a location where you, I suspect, are required to be there for this job. Probably you didn't say you worked from home for, you know, more than 30 hours a week, could be 40 hours a week or more. That's substantial to have to be in an environment with anxiety for 40 hours. And it's more than that, because you're feeling anxiety about it and you're not even there. You're home and feeling anxious about it. That's the type of thing that I would pay attention to, because I think long term endurance of that is a part of medical apartheid and how we end up with health problems. Like, sometimes that might be a signal that, you know what, this is not for me. I need to, like, my body is telling me, like, that's what that is. Like, this is not anxiety. This is, I need to get out of this environment. Like, that's what the signal is sometimes, because I don't think that should be ignored. Like, when you're getting that, you know, where you are disrupted at home, you have not been in this environment for a period of time. And that's always great. Everybody, I think, even people that have jobs that they absolutely love, like people that have, people that have what they call your dream job, you know, and make a great salary, you know, get promotions and all the rest of it. And it's not a slave. They literally love what they do. Even they enjoy having a vacation. So everybody loves that. But it's totally different when you're not there and you feel anxious, like, oh, I got to go back and be around these folks. And, you know, they hate my guts and despise me. And I mean, and I got to be around these people for 40 hours a week or whatever it is. And for how long? Like, how long am I going to be here? Like, that's when they said that at the beginning about a timetable on it, it would have to be a time. Like, how long am I going to be in this environment? Like, is that realistic for me to think, like, can I build a career here? Do I want to stay here? Could I be here for 5 years? Can I endure another 2 years of this? You know, I just don't think that's a healthy way to exist. And the system of white supremacy promotes unhealth. But yes, I would certainly be looking to update my LinkedIn, update my resume. And I'm not sure if I would want to hang out too long in an environment where, I guess, is this a job? Like, how long have you been? If I could ask two questions, how long have you been on this job? And is this a place that, you know, you were thinking, like, hey, I want to hang out here long term. Like, this is a spot where, you know, if I could be here for 5 years or more, great. Or is this just, hey, this is a great opportunity for now, and just kind of seeing what things, like, what, how long have you been here, and what was your time frame for, you know, what you were thinking about working in this particular place?
I was thinking that this was going to be a long-term career, just because when I was working at this organization as a contractor, as a vendor, so to speak, I then was given a permanent position in the same organization that was just amazing. It was just this opportunity that was given to me by this one lady who really liked my work and thought that I would be a good fit for a role. She didn't tell me what role it was, and I was put in this position that I'm in right now, working for a non-white manager. And what's happened is that the lady that got me to this position, I thought I was going to work under her, but she probably at that point didn't. I guess I should have told her that is what I had expected, and then was placed in a different position, in a different role. Anyhow, so in the you had mentioned in the Me Too era of white women getting being able to complain and whine and show some kind of victimization at work. See, this one lady, I did provide her a lot of assistance in her job when she was very new. And she came to me just before the holidays and told me that she had gotten the position that I'd been vying for, that I thought I'd be getting. And so she had told me that she would not be staying in the same position that she's just gotten promoted to. because all she's looking for is the hike in salary or in wages. And after that, she'd be able to buy her two homes and move on to staying at home and living happily ever after. So it is a very interesting situation where people do give me their life plans, share that with me, and then tell me not to tell anybody about it. And especially not the woman that just employed her and gave her that promotion. And so I'm in that situation where I'm thinking, okay, so I'm getting two different types of information. One from the lady who's giving her that job, that position, our lead manager. And she told me that she had asked for the job. And the lady who is getting that job or that position had told me that she was approached for that job. So there's a lot of stuff that is just contradictory. I feel that there's a lot of deception going on, and that probably has a lot to do with my anxiety going back to this job.
You certainly know your work situation substantially better than I do. Anybody on this line, anybody else in the known universe. So you are an expert. But yeah, that's pretty substantial, and particularly if it's an environment with that much deception. I guess one thing I would say, I know Mr. Fuller often talks about this, or it motivates why he recommends the 200 questions. That's not related to workplace racism, but he says a lot that oftentimes problems happen when we don't have enough information. And you talked about this white woman comes and says, hey, you'd be a great fit. And she doesn't give you all the information about what your job's going to be and where you're going to go. I think that type of thing happens a lot as well, where white people are not totally forthcoming in regards to work situations with a promotion or with lots of things, where details will be left out. And I do think that's one thing that we can all make sure that we include in our code. Even if it's, you know, something that sounds constructive, you know, a promotion of some sort, make sure that we ask enough questions. You know, just not from a standpoint, it doesn't even have to be from suspicion, just to make sure that we've covered all the bases, because nobody likes surprises in the work environment. You don't want to find out that this promotion comes with, oh, I didn't tell you that this position, it now means that you have to be at work at 4 a.m. Like, nobody wants, you know, nothing should be a surprise. If this is going to be a promotion or whatever it is, you get a raise, great. Make sure that you know everything that goes along with that in advance. Like, all right, that puts everybody in the best position possible to succeed. So that's at least one thing that I would take from this. The deception and like the toxicity of all of this, unless there's some way where you could be in a different department around different people, unless, you know, it would seem like some things would have to change drastically, so it's no longer a situation where this is nauseating on a daily basis and causing you to be not at ease even when you're not at work. Like, things would have to change drastically in order for this to be, you know, something where where you would be enthused. I mean, I would hope people would, even if you can't be enthused about being at work, even I would think most of us in a system of white supremacy are not exactly jumping up and down and excited about going to work. But I don't think it should be a situation where you have actual anxiety about just being present there. It's not because of a pressing project or a difficult situation or just a tough time, but just a general anxiety about people that are hostile to you and lie to you. I mean, wow, and tell you that they're going to promote you and don't give you all the details and then put you in a really difficult situation. I mean, that sounds like something that's totally different from just having a tough week on the job. That sounds like, wow, I don't know if I want to be in this situation long. Like, it might really adversely impact my health to be in this situation long term. But again, I am not the expert on, you know, your work situation. You are.
Thank you.
For sure. Any other folks with suggestions how you would try to deal with
Hello.
That. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, sorry to butt in. I didn't mean to talk off you. I feel very sad that this young woman is going through this problem. If you are a permanent employee, like you said, you have medical benefits. I would, on your job, like Z said, take a note of the things that you have to do. Second, I will go to the doctor because you have medical benefits and you have an anxiety problems. You have, you know, they've paid for you to go to a doctor. I know in the U.S., I think you're in the U.S., you didn't say, they have EAP programs where you talk to someone about the stress. But I would definitely suggest going to a doctor, and I will look up to see if it's a workers' compensation claim. I'm at some website. It's called workerscompensation.com. It has, like, the four requirements for what's called mental-to-mental injury, because it sounds like that what could be happening to you and the same thing physical happened. It could be a medical injury. And they also tell you on this website to refer to the American Psychiatric Association because they publish the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. You know, in general, I think we've talked about that before. And that will be used to prove that you did not have a mental injury. And, again, if you go to a medical doctor, a psychologist, psychiatrist would be the medical doctor, and go through that and you just have to tell that person what you're going through. And, again, keep a record. You're going to this doctor every week, every month. You're going for a considerable amount of time. Sounds like you may only need to go once. Sounds like, I don't know, maybe you can't take it anymore. But go through that. And I know this sounds like additional stressor, but if this is really happening to you and they are causing you these problems, they are mentally injuring you, and, you know, you may have a claim for that. Because I can tell you go get another job. Like, it's easy for black people to just, oh, yeah, go get another job. I'm not going to do that. Maybe it is for you, but I'm not going to tell you to go get another job like it's easy for black people to go get another job. But there are, you know, again, we talk about reading the manual. We can't just read. I mean, there are almost manuals for everything, the law manual, the doctor manual, on your job manual. There, you know, I will look into that. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, may I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, thank you, and thank you. Thank you, caller, for sharing. What I might recommend is see if there's a possibility that you can get a transfer, if that's a possibility. If there's a way in which you can document as to, let's take it back a bit. For the manager who is inducing or imparting a lot of the trauma that's creating the anxiety, are you documenting what they are doing? And are you keeping notes, documentation, things of that nature to build up a case? Because that way you might have a case for harassment. That's where you'd be going back to your policies and procedures. But in the meantime, if there's a possibility that you could be transferred, the only thing that I could see that could be an obstacle is that if the transfer is reliant on what the manager says about you, because I know in some organizations the only way you can get a transfer is with the manager's approval. So if there's a way in which to bypass that, then definitely go for the transfer route. Also, if there's any way of connecting with the person who's above your manager, and have them as an ally, that might also be another strategic move that you might want to consider, because the manager will definitely not want to make a wrong move to their superior. So if you can be an ally to the manager's superior, that might work. And then if you're able to transfer without getting the consent of your manager to do so, then by all means, consider that as a viable option. If worse comes to worse, you know, sometimes there's just no other option than to leave, which, similar to your recommendation, that is something that, and to Gus's as well, and other callers, that is something that I would need to do as well in terms of an exit strategy. So working on your exit strategy as well. Thank you, and I leave the line.
Much obliged, B in Toronto. Logical information, suggestions. I do definitely, the female caller who spoke before, B, absolutely. It is certainly not anything to talk with ease about just, up and getting a new job. That is certainly difficult not the first step. We want to try to figure out ways where we can avoid that if and where possible. Background noise. Okay, there we go. Yeah, we want to figure out where we can to use codification, really, to try to stay once you get that job, to try to stay if we can. But I do think health is important, and that is a big sign once we start having health problems because of a job, at least in my view. That's a warning. That's something to take very, very serious. And the suggestion about the transfer I thought was awesome as well. I think that's what I've said before. Try to learn as much as you can about the job, where I said before about asking, you know, a lot of questions. Even once you get the promotion and things are working out well, I would still be trying to ask and learn as much as you can about the environment where you work at, because you never know. It might be, let's say, you know, it was me here in Seattle. I work here. They might have a plant in Portland. They might have a plant in Vancouver. They might have a plant in St. Louis. Who knows? You find that out. People I'm working here are getting on my nerves. I might be able to go in and ask. I don't even have to bring up that they're getting on my nerves. I might just be able to go in and ask, is it possible that I can get a transfer to the Portland branch? Yeah, actually, absolutely. Yeah, that's possible. When do you want to make it work? 3 months? Sure, we can do that. And they just get the paperwork rolled. That might be possible. And that would be a way that you could stay there without being harassed with the same people. But try to learn as much as you can, because sometimes there are different ways that you could stay there, where you could be transferred, you could be doing different things. You might just need additional information and the medical leave time. I thought that's great as well. Dr. Kanban has talked about that, being able to see a psychiatrist to talk about the mental anguish that is being caused by your work environment, that can be important as well. Got my update about FMLA policy for the yoga studio today in my email. Other folks who dialed in, I'll give out the number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks, we have missed totally. If you have commentary to share, proceed.
Yeah, I think I have a question for everybody.
Question?
If I may be heard.
Yes,
yeah.
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
So, yeah, so I'm actually even at work right now. I do a position where I go into a lot of suspected racist homes, which can be sketchy at some times. But I do enjoy the opportunity to be able to listen in on a lot of conversations and observe how a lot of the people are living. And so I guess my question then is, and I guess it's more of an opinion from the people listening in, sometimes I do this position is I realize that the people's homes that I'm working in, they really enjoy seeing me as an African-American woman in this position of service for their homes. And, you know, sometimes I wonder if that is then somehow supporting their, I guess, white supremacist views and encouraging their, I guess, belief that non-white people can only work in service positions like such.
Much obliged for the question. Recon, I love that. If you are around white people, even if you are not able to question them directly, sometimes that's, you know, not the case or not advisable, right? Where you can still observe, you can still study what things that they have. If you're in their residence, you know, the items that they have, as you said, conversations that they're having, you can still study the enemy. Certainly, if you're behind enemy lines, you're a prime spot to study. As for, I guess, if you working in that environment, if that's reinforcing them seeing you as inferior, or black people can only do, you know, limited types of jobs, working for white people, that sort of thing, they can't be in charge, and that that viewpoint, I think that worldview is an ingrained aspect of white supremacy culture and thought. I don't think if every single black male, female, child in the known universe who had that type of job were to quit today, I don't think it would change that at all, because that's not what is the driving force behind that way of thinking. Even when President Obama was in the White House, that did not damage or shatter that perception or thought about black people. It just further inflamed it, you know, the outrage that this nigger should be pushing a buffer or a broom or a vacuum cleaner. I mean, press what? That's like having a baboon in a dress, which was what they said. We got apes in the White House. That's what they said. Planet of the apes. Why isn't he mopping the floor? We got a coon and an ape in the White House. So, no, I don't think it does at all. I am sure that, you know, some racists, that is a part of their, what would we call it, fantasy that, oh, yes, we have this, you know, nigger here. I don't know, you know, whatever it is, if you're taking care of the children or interior. I mean, it really doesn't matter. Like, you could be there to cook food, anything. I mean, it could be something that's expensive. Let's say you were a caterer. That's expensive, like, to have somebody come to your house and prepare food. I've never had it because I don't have that type of money. But I mean, that's an expensive thing to have somebody come and prepare a meal for you. You could charge quite a bit of money to do that. Even if that were the case, they would still, you're just a coon. You know, they would call their friends and do their little Instagram things. Oh, we had this coon. We paid her, you know, $10,000. And she just made us the greatest old coon recipe. We thought she was going to do fried chicken. And she did, you know, vegan, whatever it is. That's just racism, white supremacy. So, no, I don't think you doing that, I don't think supports racism, white supremacy. And regardless of what job you have, we all support the system. So they're going to have that view regardless of what you do or don't do. They probably do have some sort of racist thoughts about you being there, but that would be par for the course. Did any other folks have an opinion?
Yes, may I add something really quickly, Gus?
Be in Toronto.
Yes. In a similar line of work, what I would highly suggest is that at any point that you feel uncomfortable, exercise the option to meet at the office. So if there's any persons that you feel are making you feel unsafe, even a tinge of safety has come into question, then make sure that the next visit is at an office, just for your safety. In terms of, and similar to what Gus had mentioned as well, it does not shatter the notion at all. I've had similar, where I've had some people that I work with say, well, we're happy to see a black woman on staff, or, you know, as if it's a novelty, because I'm literally the only one on the team. And however, it's been mixed reviews, where you have some non-white, non-black, usually Asian or Indian from India, who either feel that, or from the Middle East, who feel that black people do not deserve to have the job and will make it very, very difficult unnecessarily. Just make sure you document and you refer them to the abuse policy if they get out of line. And the same with the whites that you work with. If you find that they get out of line, remind them, refer them to the abuse policy as well, and keep yourself safe. But yeah, sometimes, regardless, it doesn't matter how well you dress. I remember I went to an organization that was dealing with housing support, and I was the only Black woman there, had my business dress, and the lady that came out that was to meet with me, because we were meeting for the first time, she went to the white woman who was in jogging pants and a ripped t-shirt. So it doesn't matter. For some people, that's their viewpoint about Black people. You just do what you need to do and just keep yourself safe. Thanks, and I leave the line.
Hugely important about having a safety code if you're going to be in white, or really anybody's residence, white or non-white. I would say especially whites, because it's such a higher probability of them being gun owners. But absolutely have a serious code about that and prioritize your safety. Did anybody else have an opinion? She was soliciting opinions on this. Did anybody else have a response? Y'all can think on it. The female caller who shared this, do you have a code for your personal safety? Just things, you know, to make sure that you are not in harm's way, and any things that you have a like list of these are red flags where I leave immediately. Do you have a code to make sure that you're secure?
You know, I just started listening to all of the cows, I guess within the last 6 months or so, and it has encouraged me to purchase Mr. Fuller's work and to really start studying and developing a code, because I was realizing that, wow, I do not have a full code. Like, if someone, even just today, a coworker of mine realized that I asked a question and then she ignored me and then answered the, you know, white coworker. And I didn't even notice it at first. My white coworker did. And so, you know, and I will say, I actually love my job. I love who I work with. I love who is working with me. It's really sometimes just the clients that love to see. I don't think they see Black women very often, is a part of it, for sure. And so, yeah, I think I'm working on developing a better code as I listen and listen to everyone else's experiences.
Grant, we are all still learning, so yeah, we're all still working on our codes. That's great to hear, though, that you are working on it. Hopefully you will not have to use it, but better safe than sorry. I'm also excited. That's great. That is rare. I'd say that's challenging to find a job that you actually love, and it's great, and you just, you know, dealing with the clients or what have you, but that's great. I hope you can stay there as long as you want and get lots and lots and lots of raises, and be safe the whole time that you're there. Let's see. Before I get the other folks, I was plowing through the emails. I will continue to do so. The number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound, press star 61 if you would like to participate. I'll unmute the other folks once I finish with this here email. This is Kizzy's cousin. She writes, glad you all had a refreshing and constructive yoga retreat. It was spectacular. Summary of racist and trifling antics for the week. Number one, I was making a hot drink in the kitchen at work and talking to a non-white colleague. I mentioned that I would be spending the weekend taking out my braids. I wasn't complaining about my hair, nor was I suggesting I was unhappy. My suspected racist director happened to be in the kitchen. She was not part of the conversation, but decided to add her tacky and racist comment. She said, I'm glad I do not have that problem. Then walked out of the room. Doesn't get any better than tacky. Number two, I was at a meeting this week when I saw two non-white, non-black males that I used to work with. Their manager, a suspected racist female who I am also familiar with, was there too. I was catching up with the non-white males when she walked over and interrupted the conversation to tell them they must return to the office with her. They looked embarrassed. The meeting took place across the road from their office building, so they did not need to be guided back, and it was lunchtime. They immediately ended our conversation and followed her out of the building. It was so tacky and terroristic. It is the year of the white woman. Been that way for a while, but I mean, wow. Flex. And the embarrassment part of it, that is the system of white supremacy. I would say if it's any non-white person, if you're in that situation, it's nothing to be embarrassed about. That white woman is in charge. I mean, we signed up for the job. That's what it is. Some days they just tell you what to do. We leave now, boy, let's go. Yes, ma'am. And you get up. I mean, unless you're resigning today, it's nothing to be embarrassed about. That's the system of white supremacy, and it is not the man, racist woman, racist man, racist child. You don't have a system. And it's been my experience, white people love that. White women, white men, white children, they love that. When they see black people talking constructively, we're not calling each other names and, you know, you coon this and talking about something silly, but talking constructively, you know, oh man, I'm, you know, happy to see you and how you doing, blah, 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 how your children checking on, just, hey, great conversation, doing well. Oh my God, can we get these, somebody make up, get that nigga away from here right now, we gotta go, let's die. Oh my God, I thought he was gonna call her a coon. They're gonna sit around and talk pleasant. I think he gave her a, oh, God, oh, I'm going to have to go back and tell about 5 racist jokes to get that out of my... I have seen this, and we have had, through the years, a number of black males and black females who have said the exact same thing, that they were not talking about racism. They weren't talking about Dr. Welsing, weren't trying to get him to read Yorugu, weren't talking to a black female, get your hair natural, none of that. Just being casual, being polite, being courteous. Ugh. It's on counterracism.com. Edward Williams, he has a sound clip where a black male, he said he was talking to a white person on the job, and the white person asked him, what can I do to help black people? You say, help, asking for help. He said, what can I do to help? You say, you want to work against racism and blah, blah, blah. I'm a white man. I want to work against, I think it was a white man. He says, what can I do to help? And he said, well, you know, just tell me anything. If you, any information that would help me on the job or anything, any observation, let me know immediately. And the white, I think it was a white guy, I might be wrong on that. but this white guy, he says, okay. Some time passed. This black male was talking to another black male in the hallway. Exactly what I said. They were not discussing Mr. Fuller. They were not talking about counter-racism. It was just, you know, hey, how you doing? Oh, okay. How the smiling, not name-calling or anything like that. Courteous dialogue. He said that that white man came and told him, he said, that right there. Sitting around and talking to that black guy in the hall, that is not acceptable. We do not want to see that here at work. And the black guy was stunned, like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? We are not interested in that. We do not want to see black people being out. And I'm paraphrasing, but we do not want to see black people hanging out and being nice. We're not interested in that. Cut that off. Stop that. Just something to be mindful. If you have the pleasure of having black people that you have that sort of rapport with in the job, oh yeah, whites are going to be very alert to that, and they will probably do things to disrupt it. I've heard people where they moved the seats. I forgot about that. Was recent. Red in Ohio said that black people that she got along with, it was within days they moved the whole seating chart. Break the whole click up. Not going to have that. Black. The next thing you know, they'll be in here talking codification or anything would happen. Put her on the 7th floor. Put her in the basement. Put her on the 30th floor. There we go. Solve problem. Continuing with the list, number 3. Earlier in the meeting, I sat at a table with people that I had never met before, including a non-white black female who was due to speak at the event. She had a broken ankle. When the time came for her to go on stage, I saw her bending down to pick up her crutches, which she had placed on the floor beside her. As she did so, her race soldier colleague, who was seated at the same table with us, jumped up, went on stage, and delivered her presentation. I saw her put her crutches down, but she did not react. I spoke to the non-white female during the break. I didn't mention what I had seen, but I guess she was bothered because she told me that her race soldier male colleague had essentially usurped her. I told her that I saw her bending down to pick up her crutches. Surprisingly, she laughed about it, so I did too. Neither of us mentioned racism, as there was no need to. Trifling and terroristic. Now, I, trying to think what was going to happen with this, I thought it was going to be that the non-white person didn't get her crutches and just let her stumble to get up on stage. And I'm thinking, you know, if this had been a white woman and she, you know, she has a presentation or whatever, like, oh my gosh, we'll carry her up on stage and, you know, we'll hire five black guys, get up here and grab that white woman, you know, walk her, get up, put her in a crown and walk her up on the, like, it would have been something like that. And I mean, that was a whole nother level of what I was thinking, like, wow, not only are we not going to get the crutches, like, in fact, sit down. I'm going to go do the presentation. You're not going to do, no, we got brought some crippled nigra in here. You're not going to embarrass us. Just sit down. And not even have the decency. You could have said all that in advance, right? Like, oh, you got your crutches today. I don't know. Maybe just take a load off. You know, you're here. We'll compensate you and all of that. Just take it easy. Take care of that ankle. Put your foot. You're supposed to elevate. Isn't that what they say? Rest. Elevation, compression, ice, right? Isn't that what they say? Do that. Just hang out. You can do the next one. You could have at least said that in advance. Don't have me up here looking like I'm about to get up and go present, and then you go up on like, absolutely disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Like, wow. I was, not to be surprised. That is something that I would say something about, though, because I mean, wow, that is like so massively incorrect. Massively. I don't know if there was like a program or something that had her name listed as the presenter. Like she said, it was an event. So I don't know, you know, how formal of an event this was. But I mean, wow, if I'm a slated speaker and you don't even tell me and I'm in the process of getting up, and you just go and give the presentation, like, wow, that is the height of disrespect. And that's exactly what I mean. The female caller that spoke previously that said you work in the residence of whites. That's exactly what it doesn't matter what you're doing. This person clearly was not here as a custodial staff member, right? This is a professional business, I'd say business woman, but that's not the case, a female. Who's here to do professional work, well-trained, competent in her field, the listed speaker for the event. That's not what we see. You're not supposed to be in charge. I don't care if you're sure. It's not, wow, let me give a standing ovation. We got a hard working black woman here. Wow, she is here with a broken ankle and she will not be denied. That's not it at all. It's, why is this coon speaking? Let me get up. I didn't want to hear this coon anyway. Yeah, sit down. I'm not even going to do her the decency of letting her know. I'm just going to get up and give the presentation and she'll figure it out. Sit down, coon. Wow. That is why we have workplace racism. Star 6-1 if you have comments to share. Other folks, did you have comments, questions?
Can I just ask you what the email is?
My email? That's what you're talking about?
For the workplace racism, yeah.
UntilJustice@gmail.com, just like it's spelled, UntilJustice@gmail.com.
Thanks. I went to the blog and couldn't find it there.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. I'll add it to the blog. Thank you kindly. UntilJustice@gmail.com. If listeners need it as well, feel free, drop a line.
Greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Other folks who dialed in, if you have either your own situation or if you have...
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, everybody.
Happy New Year. Let's see. I heard Irie first. I heard Irie first, so we'll get her and go from there.
Well, hi, everybody. And Happy New Year, if... I can say that. I know you said you don't like saying happy. Didn't you say that, Gus? You don't like saying Happy New Year a while back.
I don't celebrate anything, so it wouldn't be. It would be. I just don't do Happy Birthday or Happy Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Godfather. I mean, I just don't do holidays until white supremacy is done.
I got you. Okay. I guess I'm like my grandmother. I'm just glad I made it over. But I do understand that. And I'm glad that everybody's on the line. I want to tell B that I think that's highly constructive for you to say, you know what, let me pause my, not necessarily efficacy, but the speed and the, I guess you could say, you know, the intensity and you go in your way that you go about doing things on the job because they don't appreciate you and you shouldn't continue to, you know, do things that show you're willing to be abused. I think that's the biggest message from your story anybody can hear. If you're being abused, don't be quick to reinforce it. And it reminds me of that psychological damage that occurs when people go to the casino, when they're not given a reward. And if they are, you know, they get it that one time, and then it's a long time before they get any other rewards again, but they keep playing because they think they're going to get that payout. And I think that's a psychological ploy to not promote black people or non-white people when they deserve it, but then show them a little bit of something here and there that really doesn't mean anything in the context of the overall effort that's been put out and what they're going to get in return inevitably. And then to the other caller after her, I would say don't feel bad that, but not don't feel bad, but don't wonder why you didn't get promoted, because I think that's part of the standard operating procedures psychologically as well, that they are going to promote white people over black people. It's a given, whether they have it coming or not, because they need that underclass, like Dr. Claude Anderson says, they need the underlings there to prop themselves up, to abuse, so forth and so on. I was at a facility years ago doing mental health. I already was there to my chagrin because I have a degree in fine art graphic design. And here I am. You know, I'm taking care of people who are disabled. I didn't mind it because they couldn't practice racism on me for the most part. But I found out about a position that was an art therapist. And everybody, I didn't tell people that I had a degree, or well, many people, maybe one or two people, and one of those people was a non-white black male that worked in HR. And he said, you should go for this position because you are the only one here that qualifies. You have a degree, you have experience, you prior service, go for it. Instead of them even giving me an interview for the position, and mind you, I also had, you know, teaching, a teaching resume along with this and community service. So I had the wherewithal, the skill and the evidence and so forth to show I can do this. At least let's have, as they say, a conversation. Instead of letting me even get to that point, they closed the job out and said, oh, well, we're just not hiring anybody at all. And so, you know, again, that's joyfulness and it's done to keep us in a particular place for once and for all, and it's also done, yes, to make you feel bad, because you can't have white supremacy without making non-white people feel like crap. And there's one last thing I want to share. The caller behind B in Toronto said something about white women looking for reasons to complain. A couple years ago, I was listening to NPR, and they were interviewing various white women who were in inappropriate or incorrect sexual situations with some CEO of some company, who knows. And this white woman, white female, had not been sexually harassed or had not been in some type of mutual inappropriate relationship with this guy, but she wanted attention so bad from him that she, in my opinion, turned him not paying her attention and her needing a raise to say that it's possible that he's going to sexually harass me if I try to talk to him about what's going on with my job or how I think I need a raise. So one day he has a meeting with her, and he's like, what's going on? You like your job? Da, da, da. She's like, yeah, I like it. You know, everything's cool, but I'm not making enough money. And he looked at her and said, okay, do you need a raise? And she said, I was going to tell him I needed a raise, but something told me, no, don't do it, because if you do, he'll win. And I was sitting there like, this is absolute balderdash. Obviously, he doesn't want you, okay? You saying you didn't make enough money, tell a man you need a raise, or confirm it. But she just wanted to be a victim so bad. She was like, oh, I didn't tell him, I didn't let him get one over on me, so I just ended up leaving the company. I don't know. It's just mental pollution, but meditate, watch stuff that's funny in between your, you know, time at work, on your break, take naps. That's what I used to do. And, you know, keep praying, keep meditating, and it's not you. Not you at all. Thank you. I'll mute my line.
It is not you. I hope that's at least one thing, because I think I've said it for years. Part of the premise for this specific program, Workplace Racism, I'm talking about, is that I don't think enough or very many black people, non-white people, period, have access to outlets where they can talk to other non-white people about workplace racism. And so sometimes we end up thinking that it's something defective. I was going to say specific about us, but it's not just that. It's something defective about us, that I'm not getting this raise because of me. You know, it's something, my work is poor quality, or I'm incompetent, or I don't have proper training. It must be me, you know, as to why I'm not getting this job, why I'm not getting this raise, why I'm not getting this promotion, or whatever it is, as opposed to, wait a minute, this is happening to black people all over the world. Be in Toronto, other black people, quite a few other black people, Stacy in the UK, all over the world that this is happening to. It can't be that all of these black people are defective. Malcolm X said that it can't be that all of them are defective, because some of these folks seem like they got it together. They got, you know, degrees and all that. Like, how can that be that you see the exact same and the exact same lame excuses a lot of times as to why you don't get these promotions and raises? It's hugely important, because talk about that erosion of black self-respect, wasting your time and energy. When they say, oh, yeah, we got this position, maybe, and they get your hopes all up. You, what she said about, you can't have a system of white supremacy without mistreating, disappointing black people. Racist, that is one of their racist jokes. To disappoint, get a black person's hopes up, and to then disappoint them. They love to do that. Oh, we got it, you're going to get the giant in there. Oh, it changed up, sorry. Thought you were going to get it. But yeah, we had a cut in budget, and we had to cut a position, so yeah, it looks like we're not going to have that spot to promote you. Sorry. Yeah, I guess you'll have to just keep cleaning toilets for another year, huh? Yeah, sorry about that. And then they go off and like, standard. Love it. Build them up to break them down. Get them the hopes up and then dash it all. Oh, we're not going to sell you tomorrow. Yeah, we'll keep the whole fan. This was Selling Slave Day. Workplace racism, beginning of the year. We talked about that. Selling Slave Day. You're not going to be sold. Get your hopes up. And, oh, man, we had some debts. Sorry, we are going to have to sell you off. Guess this will be our goodbyes. Wish you a good 2020 down in Louisiana. Other folks that we've missed totally for workplace racism. Commentary, commentary, questions, or suggestions.
Hi, Gus. May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
First and foremost, I thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on your show. I'm a regular listener. I wanted to kind of give some advice to the young lady, I think, who was having, I think she said she was having, like, anxiety issues with her workplace. I called into your show, like, earlier in the year because I was dealing with something similar. And I just wanted to parrot some of the points that the other people mentioned about her seeking therapy, and most importantly, documenting what's going on. And I had a situation where my supervisor, and she would not allow me to transfer. And so I had to go through the ADA process, basically. Americans with Disability Act and request some accommodations to basically get out of that position. And even going through that entire process, there's no, you know, in a system of white supremacy, things that are supposed to happen don't always happen the way that they should happen. They were theoretically supposed to, you know, accommodate me in that particular position. But what happened is that I was placed on like a paid administrative leave and given a chance to apply out. So just to wrap my story, you know, up, basically I ended up really terminated from that particular company for basically like a month. And then they basically rehired me, you know, back on within like a 30-day time period. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I've almost been there 6 months to this day. But I just wanted to, you know, just encourage her to, you know, seek, you know, therapy if she needs it. And if she can't get a transfer because my supervisor was so, you know, spiteful, you know, she may have to go the ADA route. And one last thing about a promotion, this job for me was a promotion, and I was actually asked to apply for that position. And one of the things I failed on that you mentioned was to ask questions. And I did not ask those questions because, you know, I saw it as an opportunity to, you know, make more money and, you know, just to kind of expand my role. So I was asked to apply for this position, got in the position, and it, you know, it turned out to be a bad situation. So I just wanted to, you know, just, you know, basically to, you know, suggest for her to continue therapy, continue documenting. My situation was to the point where there was even an exchange of letters between the company and an attorney. And, you know, although I was, you know, terminated ultimately, I guess, in quotations, terminated, they had to rehire me back on in a completely different department. And so far, you know, things have been going, you know, okay. But I just wanted to kind of just throw that out there, and I'll mute my lines.
Much obliged. Glad to have you calling back in and sharing. I guess if the information was constructive when you dialed in before, to share. I do say that if, you know, you call in and share, if the information is helpful, that's great. You can share that because that lets us know that it might be constructive for others. And if it's not, you listen and don't think it's logical or it won't help your situation, you can share that too, because we don't want to be sharing nonsense on the program trying to solve problems. But documentation, very important. And finding out other means of getting the resources that you need. Being denied at first. Oh, so if I can be labeled as quote unquote disabled, then I can get the resources I need. Well, outstanding. ADA brochure. Let's see. Or just go to their website. Bang. No problem. Sometimes it can just be a matter of getting access to that information. And we are still in the system of racism, white supremacy. So white people absolutely can deny those transfers. You just try, you know, as best you can in the system that we have. And questions. Gotta ask questions. Gotta ask questions. Racists are infamous for that sort of thing. Where it looks like it's gonna be great. Just missing a few pieces of information. Ask questions. Try to ask as many questions as you can. Other folks who dialed in, if you have... Oh, wait a minute. Before we get to other folks. One thing on... workplace racism. I had said before about updating my own resume. Oh man, I had it written down. I'll have to include it as we go. Get other folks until I get my thought back about workplace racism related directly to yoga practice and doing the... I'll probably get it as soon as someone starts talking. It'll come back to me. Other folks who dialed in that we've missed totally, if we have not heard from you at all and you have either your own situation or you have suggestions based on what's been shared thus far, proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. And I just wanted to start out by saying, you know, I'm very glad the yoga retreat, all of them, I hope very well that they all go well. I just want to start out with some of the incidents that I've documented also in my email, and I've documented them down. There's this sergeant, a racist sergeant, because I believe I shared the one about him trying to offer the cookies. I have two of them, two with him practicing racism. Okay, so this first one, this happened before the cookie incident. And I was walking toward the other side of the building, and I have to cross the lobby where the entrance is. So a black male a shirt and tie, okay, formal attire that they call it. And this white guy is suspected a race soldier, period, like literally sergeant. Okay, so he says to the guy, he's smuggling something. Make sure you pat him down. So, you know, smiling and his face is red and stuff like that. So, and that kind of really intensified the black self-respect when he came and approached me with the cookie. So just that's some more context on that, because that happened before that, about an hour and a half before that. And the second one is, I was getting onto the elevator, and the white bailiff, the sheriff or whatever, he was getting on there. And I guess the older guy, the sheriff, sergeant, once again, he was getting onto the elevator. So I guess he was limping. Maybe he was injured or whatever. So he looks at me and says, "You see what I have to put up with?" And I said, "Wow, what are you up to now?" So, and this guy, race soldier, right? So he goes to his pocket. He says, "Oh, no, he's not going to say anything. I said, "You see, he's pulling out money, right?" And then, so he looks at the white guy and he says, "And I ain't pulling out the ones either, just so I can whip your ass." So we get off of the elevator, and I'm going into the department, and they say, you can see the love, right?" And I asked the question. I was like, "Is that what it is?" So he was just laughing. He didn't respond. And my third one is, there was another couple that came in, and this guy was wearing a Trump hat, like, and I think, I don't know if anyone on their job see this. It wasn't a MAGA hat, but you might as well say it's MAGA. It just had Trump on it. So you can tell they're trying to get a response primarily out of black people, non-white people. So they're filling out a marriage license application. This guy is cowbell, definitely. Colombian, so-called Colombian, brown-skinned, Spanish-speaking female, right? So she's there with her daughter, and she's filling out the application. So the guy says, "Oh man, I need to go and fill out. I need to go and find out what's the date of my last divorce." So I was like, "Oh, well, I can look it up for you if you got a divorce here." He was like, "Oh no, I got it in Levy County." So he went to the car to go get the date or whatever. Now the daughter is trying. She's asking me about the race. The race, you know. "What race do I pick? What race do I pick?" So I was like, "I can't really, you know, I can't tell you what classification to pick." So the white woman, my coworker, she Googles the Colombian racial classifications. And she said Google told her that, I guess, Hispanic is the most, I guess, well-known classification, racial classification. So she just scrolls down and sees that, and then she just clicks on that. But she didn't know what to pick. I've never seen this. So, and I had asked about this before, and I think you mentioned before, Gus, that when you try to make requests, you try to ask questions, right? And they don't get back to you. And sometimes that no answer is an answer, I guess. So it shows how they regard my request. So they ended up picking Hispanic. All right. And the guy hadn't came back yet. So once he came back, they ended up finishing the not classification, but the application. And they went and waited for the marriage license clerk to finish the session. My next one is, there was a incident of anti-blackness, because this, I guess it was a black male with the janitor crew that comes in after work to clean up. And I was heading away from the vehicle to come back inside before I could clock in and leave work that day. And he goes, hey, say, you know, they're looking for you. And I said, who looking for me? He said, they said two big trucks. They got an APB out for you. Now, this is another black person saying this. So, and then see, this is, and then now we'll say this to each other, and we'll say it in the tone like we're so-called joking with each other. But he said it with, you know, the stylistic way of, I guess, trying to get his point across that, hey, you know, they got an APB out for you. So I said, huh, well, I wouldn't be surprised. That was my response. But the guy does, you know, tend to be generous or whatever, but he was very forward and blunt with that. But I'm not surprised at the same time. That's why I was like, oh, I ain't surprised. And my last one is, there was a bailiff that said this to a black female, reported this to me, that when she was coming in one day into the courthouse to go to where the desk she's been assigned, the white bailiff race soldier asked her something, where are you going or whatever? And the other white guy says, oh, to hell if she doesn't get her attitude straight or something. And she told me, she responded that, well, I know you already got a spot reserved or something, some response she gave. And that's all I have for now. I did have a few more, but I'll just stop right there. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Woo, 2020 at the courthouse. My goodness, down in Florida. We were in Florida, I think a little further south than our caller at the courthouse. But it was pretty warm. Like, I was, you know, in pretty good spirits. Like, it was 80-degree weather, even the days that it rained. It was warm and over 70 degrees. Like, that alone would have me in good spirits. No way. Not racist, as hostile as can be. He said at the courthouse, where is she going in the response to hell if she doesn't get her attitude? Like, whoa. It's not even, keep it secular. Wait a minute. Separation. Wait a minute. Like, whoa. This is not the Bible study. Like, wait a minute. Like, separation. Let's be professional. We are not damning colleagues to hell. Like, and I mean, even that's one for a question. What's wrong with my attitude? Like, we could address that if it's a serious problem, but I mean, wow. Woo, at the courthouse. Okay. The racial, any workplace where a part of the job involves racial classifications, either you having to identify, you, I guess, the census or something like that, your clients having to identify their racial classification, wowee, you have just a wonderful opportunity to study and observe, and maybe even to ask questions As he said, I mean, what does this classification even mean? Like, what are we supposed? That's another one. What are we supposed to say? Like, what's the company line when they come in and ask about all this? What are we supposed to say? What does Hispanic even mean? Because my understanding, that is not a racial classification. So that wouldn't even be an accurate choice if we're talking about making a racial classification. Hispanic shouldn't even be on there. But you know, maybe they got a different understanding. That should be explained. But wow, you don't say anything. That's what you don't help them with the answer. See, we should adapt that to our regular code. You don't help them with the answer. And she's confused. I don't know what to mark. Now, this white woman gets on the computer. Now, is the policy, like, have they said that? Because I thought you had said that before, that you've given that same response. When they come in and fill out the form for racial classification, you are not supposed to help them with the answer. Is that the policy for the courthouse?
I believe it is. I'm going to say yes. I'm not absolutely certain, but I have heard other people say that they couldn't help one of the parties of the couple pick their racial classification. And I also did hear the marriage license clerk, the black female, say that you can just put other or something like that, no race or something like that, like not make a selection. I've heard her tell one of the some of the couples that as well.
At minimum, it would seem like inconsistent enforcement of policy, if not just out and out. The arbitrariness, that's what I mean. White people can make this up as they go. That's why individuals classified as white. They don't even answer some of the questions. Well, just let me know so I can be informed. I'm trying to do quality work. Tell me so I know the correct thing to say. I don't get a response. It's like, well, dang, I didn't even get a response. Like, I just want to, know what to say when people come up here. They don't follow the policy about not helping with the answer. And then the sloppiness of it. A white woman, she goes and looks online and says, oh, you're Colombian? Google says that's Hispanic. What? Come on. All of this is about confusion. Nothing is more confusing than we make it up as we go. White by law, Ian Honey Lopez, guest on the program. We make this up as we go. The APB out for you from black co-worker, victim of racism. All I can say is, unfortunately, you have to be pretty codified about that. Those types of comments from other victims. I think you've shared before about black people that you work with, one of the black males there making some sort of, snide type, here comes trouble type of thing about you and other type of remarks like that. The system has done an extraordinarily effective job in contaminating how we think, see, treat, talk to other black people. That is why Dr. Welsing talked so frequently about black self-respect, to work against that, so that you do not, so that when you see another black person, you think my grandmother, my grandfather, my mother, black people that I have the utmost regard for, and I'm going to try my best to be patient with this black person and to at minimum be courteous with this black person and not just, Mr. Fuller said that we get on the job and see each other and we just become entertainment. And most of the entertainment is snide remarks in the form of a joke or I'm just playing, that's the dozens, I'm just playing. And it's not funny at all. I'm a criminal. They got a bit, really? I'm Jeffrey Dahmer, really? And a beautiful response. I don't doubt it. Yes. Bill Cosby's not safe. President Obama's not safe. Exactly right. It would not surprise me at all if they did indeed have an APB out for me. You have a blessed 2020 as well. Thank you kindly. And that's all you can do is try to minimize as best you can. Be patient. And like I said, you have to be prepared for that because we had a lot. It's not just caller at the courthouse. It's a number of folk. Pam used to talk about that all the time, where she worked around a lot of black people and white people, and it would be that all day long. Black people making nasty remarks and joking and calling each other names and insults and all of that. And the best thing you can do, that is one for sure, nothing. I have nothing to, and that's one also for sure. I expect this, so I'm not going to come in and be surprised anew every day when they start with the insult, and the white people would be there just to laugh and, I'm already going to have my code about not responding to this, watching my verbals, and trying to be as patient with them as I can. But that is to be expected, unfortunately, in this system. Not brother and sister, but, oh yeah, you are wanted, aren't you, fella? Got your fingerprints on file, don't you, fella? Let's see. For context. For context. Didn't need it with folks trying to shove food on you. I mean, that's suspicious in and of itself. I don't go out. Even at the retreat, I wasn't exactly trying to cram sweet potato pie down anybody's mouth, we'll offer. But hey, no problem. No big deal. We're certainly not signing petitions to make people eat anything. But the context, like, you're just talking about, again, I'm a criminal of some. You see the same patterns. I'm a criminal of some sort. I'm smuggling, contraband into the courthouse where I'm an employee, or I'm bringing bombs in, or who knows. Pat him down. And then after all that, here, have some cookies. Come on. You're hungry, aren't you? You're starving. Yeah, come on. I'm good. And that's why I say in general, the rule should just be in general. I'm not eating anything that anybody here has to offer. Keeping in mind how I've been treated is great. But I mean, at this point, it should be, hey, we should have a whole lot. What do they, the epigenetics? It should be a huge stock of mistreatment by a lot of white people, and unfortunately a lot of non-white people in work environments, that, hey, nothing to gain here. I don't care if it's the tastiest sweet potato pie ever, tastiest cookies ever. I don't care what it is. I'm good. It can't be that many white people or even non-white people that you work with that you are that cool that, oh yeah, I trust this person putting something in my mouth. That list has got to be enormously short for every single one of us, even those of us who have jobs that we think are just splendid. Really? Much obliged, caller at the courthouse. Criminal. See right there? Right there. Pat him down, and then you come back. Even the black people, they think about you the exact same way. Got an APB out. You're a criminal. You're not an upstanding citizen. Maybe we should be thinking about you for employee of the year. You're a criminal. And that's go right back to what the female caller said when she was talking about working, and maybe the white people, maybe if me working in this capacity, it helps. No. That's white culture. That's what it means to be white. You can be convict free. I work at the courthouse. I'm all about the community. I'm an upstanding citizen. You want to come and get married and get your records and all that? No. You're a coon. I think you're a rapist. They remember they gave that metaphor before? They were talking about the, they said, now see, if he was a thief, if he was the rapist, remember that one? You gave the example. She used the metaphor and you were the criminal. I'm not making that up, am I?
Yes, sir. That was the white woman. She is on. She's still in the same department, but yes, she made multiple comparisons, like metaphors and stuff, with me and the example being the domestic abuser beating up on her and saying that if she was underage and I was over the age of 18, making the R. Kelly one too. So yeah, she was lethal in those comparisons.
That's how they see us. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You can show up every day, be professional, on time, courteous. You speak nicely to everyone. You're a thief. You're a criminal. You're 5 seconds away from a rapist or whatever else. I think that's what you said. A rapist. That fella right there, if he was 17 and... It doesn't matter what you do. That's just understanding what it means to be white. And again, all of this comes back to that way you have proper expectations. When these type of things happen, you're not stunned. You're not surprised. You can handle things much better. You don't have a, emotional response, like you're not emotionally invested. This is about what I expected. I understand this sort of thing happens to black people all the time. We're in a work environment. We had the caller who before said this was like a white superior. This wasn't some low-level white guy. Would come up to him and say, hey, what's up, pimpin'? How you doing today, pimp? And he said this went on for a while before he finally questioned him and said, what, do you call anybody else here a pimp at work? That would be another criminal. They generally arrest people that are involved with prostitution. Robert Kraft, right? And the guy says, no. Can we desist? I might want to raise someday. I might want a promotion. Same thing like the caller that wrote in about the white woman accusing him of calling her a hood rat. Somebody probably will overhear this. Who knows who the person overhearing could be? They too might think of me as a pimp now, as opposed to a hardworking employee who deserves a raise here. Much obliged, caller in Florida. Anybody that we missed totally that had a hand up? I'll check again, make sure, since we are getting close to the conclusion. If you didn't get to share at all, make sure you get a hand up sometime in the next 15 minutes. I did remember before I left for Florida, I went to the spa to get self-care. I talked about that. I talked about that at the retreat. Talked about it here. Doing things to replenish is extremely important, especially if you know it's going to be especially demanding. If you're already sensing anxiety, stress from your work environment, that is a critical time to nourish, take care of yourself, not to try to overexert or to be around people who really try your patience, people that are not patient and loving with you. Might be a time to minimize contact with them. All of that notwithstanding, I went to the spa before the retreat, and I didn't know that they had industry night at the spa. Industry night is discounted. I think it's half price. And industry night is for anyone in the business reading. I read the details on what that meant, and anyone in the industry means if you are in the massage industry, what is the second thing they have listed? Yoga industry. I said, oh my Lord, you can go to the spa on discounted on Wednesdays as a part of industry night. And I said, oh, this is probably some of their unjust networking. They go to the spa, you get to hang out, you do some self-care, swap racism, white supremacy, or whatever else. Probably talk about some business things and doing some yoga retreats or whatever else at the spa. I said, wow, if I was a white person, I would be at industry night for the spa. That right there would be a part of my recommendation. Might be some other folks, because I know they have industry night for other fields. I know for some bars. I know this from when I worked at the comedy club in Atlanta, that they would have the same type of thing for people that did clubs and that sort of thing. So I know that that's common regardless of what your field is. Lots of just and unjust networking opportunities. Let's see. I'll check again. Any other folks? Well, make sure before I do that, did anybody have suggestions for the caller that wrote in? The white woman, there were two episodes where she accused him of calling her a hood rat in front of others, apparently, where, you know, this was heard in the office. And the first time, black male, he didn't respond at all. He didn't change his stride. He kept right on walking. She did it again. Called me a hood rat, and, you know, I think this time he said it was something to the effect of, you know, I didn't say a word. I don't even use that sort of language. In my view, this is a dangerous white woman, that she would be lying like this publicly, and to be making this type of accusation repeatedly. This is someone who is very dangerous. Did anybody have any suggestions for how you would recommend neutralizing that sort of situation? If you think I'm incorrect in perceiving this as a major threat, then please speak up there as well. But this, any type of repeated false accusations, I think is major. Now we're showing a pattern. Now, it's you called me a hood rat today. Is it going to be you raped me tomorrow, or you stole my purse tomorrow, or, you know? But any suggestions on what you would do to neutralize this situation? Maybe folks haven't dealt with that one. If you have a workplace journal, both of those incidents would be noted. Date, time witnesses because he said other people were there. So I would write down names of folks who were there. That might even be one to get other people to sign that they heard this. Like I said, I take accusations in the workplace very serious. Black people are getting charged with things so frequently. You stole this, or you showed up late, or you did anything. So yeah, that all of that would be documented, well documented. And I might have to, like, it's repeat. I mean, even the first time, but certainly once we've got to the second time of being accused of things publicly, I might have to say something about that. I might have to go to a powerful white person if we have a non-white person who's in charge, because that's, like I said, investigation. If I did do something incorrect, well, unless nip that in the bud immediately so that I am on par with policy and procedure. I don't want to be around here doing incorrect things. If this is a false charge, then I would like this stopped immediately. Like, this is the last time. This should never happen again. And are any other employees being publicly charged with misconduct by their coworkers in the office? That's a question. That would be one I would ask. Like, that sort of thing I take really serious. If anybody, you know, thinks that that's an overreaction, please speak up. But a white, even if it was a white dude, but particularly a white woman making this sort of charge publicly, major danger sign. I would want that stopped immediately. If folks have a suggestion on that before we sign off, that's great. We have 10 minutes left. Any other comments, questions, suggestions folks need to air before we sign off?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, Gus. I have one last thing. This is super tacky right here. This happened this morning. Victim of racism, the black male in the court director, high position in the office in the civil area. Before the meeting this morning began, he made a comment about, I guess, New Year's, I guess the day off and it being associated with the debauchery, going out partying or whatever. He said, well, you know, let's get the meeting started. Good morning. How's everybody doing? And I know that I noticed that a lot of people wasn't here at New Year's Eve, December 31st. And I'm glad to see everyone here. And most people, doesn't look like you had a mugshot or something like that. And this is a comment that was made, and I used the code to not smile or nothing. And I, cause I've been doing that with white people as well, but especially in those kinds of environments where you have a lot of people around and some people have a tendency to, well, a lot of people have a tendency to just go along because they see other people laughing. And I just made sure I exercised counter-racist codification to just stand there and just listen for the constructive information and not laugh at that. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Much obliged, caller in Florida. That does take some discipline because I think a lot of times we already experience mistreatment in work environments and outside of work environments too, obviously. So a lot of times we just, you know, what do they say? We don't want to rock the boat, make it seem like we're going along. We're not doing anything to stand out or make it seem like we're aloof, as they say. So it can be difficult, but absolutely. If they're going to be tacky with that sort of conduct, then mudslides and the rest, hey, I don't need to sit here and, you know, cackle and hee-haw as though this is the funniest thing ever. I can sit quietly and observe. And again, that takes some black self-respect, takes some discipline. Same thing with the food, because that's another one, you know, same type of thing where it can be easy to just, eh, I don't really want it, but I'll go along. All right, fine. Give me the cupcakes and fine. It takes some discipline. No, I'm good. Like, thanks, Martha. I'm sure they're the best brownies, donuts in the world. I'm good. No, I don't need to laugh. Like, it just takes some discipline. Talked about those nonverbals. Emmy said that before. Just being mindful, being disciplined about, you know, your responses in the workplace, black self, and a little bit of practice. It's, you know, not overnight, but I think once you kind of get accustomed to it for a while and just managing your responses, it gets much, much easier. Just takes, like many things, it just takes a little bit of practice.
Hello, maybe.
Greetings, Irie.
I wanted to co-sign with what you said about making a report to a high-level person. Yeah, that's all I can think of. And I guess whatever the procedure is for that job as far as addressing things like that. And I wanted to ask you, do you have like a P.O. box, Gus, or something where I could send something I want to contribute its material? And I think it would be possibly constructive if you... Okay, so basically it's a bookmark that I came up with based off your prayer at the end of the session. And I was like, oh, snap, what if Gus was able to hand this out to non-white people at his yoga sessions and stuff, you know? So I just thought it might be nice, a nice little takeaway for people when they go to your yoga events. And I wanted to send it to you in the mail, what I came up with.
Reading is more important than watching television. Anything that promotes a little bit of reading, hopefully that'll be constructive. I can drop you an email with a mailing address. Much obliged. Bookmarks. Personalized bookmarks, no less. That's right on. Much obliged. Let's see.
No problem.
Did anybody... anybody else? Anything they wanted to get in before we conclude? About 30 seconds left.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to say a big thank you to everyone for the suggestions that they have. Really helpful, and it's really helped. I can breathe better now. Thank you so much. Mm. Thank you for your platform. Thank you, everybody.
Mm. What did we say at the yoga retreat? Breath and balance. That was the theme for the yoga retreat. Breath and balance. That was said every day. It didn't matter what was happening. Breath and balance. Even at the gun range, the instructor said breath and balance repeatedly. Neely Fuller Jr., breath. We even heard Mr. Fuller say breath. And balance. What does he say? Balance between people. That's justice. Breath and balance. Anywho, Toronto, May 21 to May 24. Get your passport. We'll be here tomorrow. Compensatory call in. 9 p.m. Man, my clock has been so... I think that is a part of why it feels like... Seattle is so far because it's three time zones generally to go east, and it takes a while to get my clock back on. I feel like it's getting it. It hasn't even been 48 hours since I got back, so it's coming. It's 9 Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Back to regular 6 p.m. Pacific. That is when it's supposed to come on. Compensatory call in tomorrow. We'll review what's gone down the last week, first week of the New Year, as they say. David Stern and Don Imus died in the last 7 days. Like, that kind of stamped the retreat, like the death of these white men, suspected race soldiers. And people, when they died, both of their deaths caused people to talk about racism. Don Imus's conduct and then David Stern's conduct. I spent a good chunk of my day today listening to people talk about David Stern and racism in a variety of different ways, talking about David Stern and racism. Donald Sterling came up and the dress code policy. Like, wow, I could have played it for workplace racism. Anywho, we'll catch up tomorrow, compensatory call-in, 9 Eastern, an ungodly hour for the program to start, 8 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Pacific. We will have a recap of the retreat, since we did that for Virginia. That was immediately done. Well, I won't say immediately, but it was done, I think, the day after I got back last time around. And that was not possible this time because we already had programs scheduled. So it'll have to be a little bit more time in between when it is able to happen. But there will be a retreat recap just to see how folks think. Hopefully they can be honest. If it was a waste of time and energy, they'll say that. If it had some constructive value, that can be shared as well. Anywho, much obliged for folks tuning in. Hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. With that, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Let's keep our brain computer working well so that we can solve this problem immediately. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, passenger or driver. Let's do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. In addition to being sober and buckled in, if you are driving, you are not on the cell phone. Again, just trying to do all we can, our small part, to minimize contact with the Daniel Holtzclaw's Amber Geigers of the known universe. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.